firstly, I would like to suggest, if the meeting agrees, that we look at the land bank nominees first, look at the program second, and then the FSR bill third. On the issue of the nominees, you've been briefed on the process. Advocate Jenkins, I don't know if he's here, has covered that, basically explaining it's a very strange thing, right, in this situation where the law says that actually the minister must notify stakeholders through, I think, a government gazette notice and whatever else, the website and so on, calling for nominations. And then he writes also to, I think, various stakeholders, maybe DBSA, land bank, and whoever else. But strangely, it also says, it's a very strange thing I haven't come across, he says Parliament's also asked to nominate. So we don't have a say on who should be finally appointed. In the last meeting, we had an informal exchange. I don't know if we agreed or didn't agree or what, but I'm putting it to the meeting that we might want to say that because we have no say on the matter, we wish to post box that we just forward the name to the minister, and then the minister will obviously, there's one vacancy available. This is because the person's term came to an end and he doesn't want to be reappointed. There are two other people whose term come to an end at the end of September, and I understand they are prepared to be reappointed, and it seems the minister has taken that route. So for now, there's one vacancy as advertised. What do members feel about the process? Or do you want to object to somebody? Yes, Mr. Shivambu.
No, Chairperson, I thought the meeting normally would start by saying this is the agenda of the meeting, and before we discuss what is in the agenda of the meeting, we adopt the agenda. I thought that is how meetings are run.
Because no, it has happened since 94. If that is a rule, we'll do that, but we've never done it.
That is how meetings are run, because I'm thinking that this communication, I don't know, from Legal Affairs about SAA issue, which I think is an issue of
Yes, we've taken a decision on that. It's been discussed on Friday morning. The committee agreed yesterday. You are not here. That matter is not for discussion. Unless people want to discuss it today now, but if it's just your view, we can't do... The meeting is clear. We don't... For anybody, whether it's an ANC member or any other member, we do not... If a person's not here, in your case it's often very legitimate because you're a chief whip and you're deputy chair of your party, but we can't open up things every time you're not here.
Chairperson, you know, the way you preside over meetings is extremely problematic, because when a member places an issue on the table, you don't create a dialogue, you must put it into the meeting, and then if the clarity that has to be provided, it will be provided.
You want to at every
and
meeting.
Then, because I was thinking that you must attend to this issue that is of national importance, because SAA is asking, going around even to the private markets to look for 16 billion rand, and it's a matter of national importance that is urgent. We're supposed to provide oversight over it.
This is coming up on the next item under the program. That's what's on there. We discussed that yesterday. We got a statement which was emailed to you last night. So on the issue of, do you want to put every agenda to the vote in a meeting? Is that the rule, Alan? No, there's no such rule. Advocate Jenkins, is such a rule? No. So we're not going to... you can go to the Rules Committee and do that. Secondly, on the issue of, do you want to discuss the SAA matter today? The legal opinion. Anybody wants to do that? No. Right, let's move on. On the issue of the land bank, I've explained the process. Previously, as I told you, the committee didn't even advertise, right, Alan? We just nominated, well, yeah, I wasn't here. Because we don't have a say on this matter. Even the ministry agrees. And Advocate Jenkins explained. It's an anomaly. I haven't come across this before. Maybe there are other laws in which this happens, but I haven't come across it, where we have no say, we're just a postbox. So, having said that, we did informally agree, but there's no formal agreement on the matter. Do you want to look at each and then decide on each person and who you want to reject and why and so on? Or do you want to just forward this to the minister? Nothing stops the minister, of course, from considering these people, even if we haven't followed. Yes, Floyd?
Can we be taken quickly on the process of what happens? Like, what does the legislation say? Does it say that these people who are nominated, what is our role? Is there a defined role in terms of legislation?
We have not defined role.
If there's no defined role for Parliament in terms of legislation, then we can't be entertaining issues that we've got no defined role on. Why are we
not? But it is in the law.
Yeah?
We discussed this matter also. To summarize, we agree with you. This is an anomaly, I said. I've never seen this in any other law where all you do is you're a post box. You forward it. Now, we can amend the law. We'll have to go to the Agriculture and Land Committee. This is where, you'll recall, the land bank is simply here because it was transferred from the Agriculture Department, is that right, Momo? To this department when it was in financial trouble, right? Now it's going back there, is that right? That's what I read in the media, shortly. That's the proposal. So this is a matter that can be taken up with the committee concerned. They must remove that, I agree. But for now, that's what it is. Advocate Jenkins, is that not what you said to us? That's what you said.
It unfortunately is written like that. It's a 2002 Act. It just requires the minister to seek nominations from the appropriate parliamentary committee. There's no role really for the committee to interview and give one candidate.
That's in the law. So in that case, it's even clearer. We have no choice. It's a really ridiculous thing, quite honestly. What we could put in our report, if members agree, is something to the effect that the committee feels that this process carries... You see, the one advantage may be, because it's Parliament, maybe people see the website, or people who don't see the other adverts of the department may see the website of Parliament, or the advert that goes out, or the press statement. That's the only advantage. So I think we should be cautious about saying remove this from the law. We should just say that we would, one possibility is we would recommend that the, what's it, Land and Agriculture Committee considers the value of this proposal at some time in the future or something. Okay, yes, Mr. Shivambo.
Can I get that? Does the law say that as the relevant committee, we must give the minister the name which he must appoint into the land bank board? Is that my understanding? Is that correct understanding?
Thanks, sir. I just got it up here. It says subsection 2 of section 4 of the Act, whenever it is necessary to appoint a member of the board, the minister must, by notice in the Gazette as well as in any other appropriate media and by written invitation to the relevant parliamentary committees, call for the nomination of persons who are not disqualified to serve on the board. So section 10 deals with the disqualifications, if you've been insolvent or if you've been convicted of a crime, etc. But it's what we did, and also in the past we put in an advert out to say this is the requirements. If you comply, please submit your name as a nomination and we send it forward to the minister. So that's the postbox you were talking about. There's no requirement for the for parliamentary committees to interview and to find out whether these persons are qualified as they say they are. That seems to be the mandate of the minister. So that's it. That's section 4, read with section 10.
Disagreement here. We also feel it's a silly thing. We are bound by this thing. Personally, I've never come across such a thing before. So there's actually no disagreement here. Okay. So there it is, colleagues. There's nothing we can do but forward these names. It's as simple as that. Is there anybody who's got a problem with forwarding these names? Okay, in that case, there's a report that has to be adopted. You've got a fix. Yeah, here it is. It says, the Standing Committee on Finance, having considered the request by the Minister of Finance to the National Assembly to nominate suitable candidates for appointment to the board of the Land Bank. Now, must this go, therefore, Advocate Jenkins, to the House in the sense that the report just gets tabled, is that right, in the ATC? It says here National Assembly. By that, they mean the relevant committee, or do they mean the House as a whole?
No, they mean, well, Parliament as a whole. The National Assembly, so when this matter was referred to the committee, the ATC required that the committee consider and report. And if that last part, in terms of the rules, you must report, so then you have to report in the House.
Will be, yeah. Okay. So, to nominate suitable candidates for the appointment to the board of the Land Bank, refer to it for consideration on 11th May in the ATC of that date, obviously. Reports as follows. The committee put out a media statement on 19th August calling for nomination of suitable candidates. The closing date for the nominations was 26th. The committee received 5 nominations. After deliberating on 31st August 26th, the committee recommends in accordance with Section 4.2 of the Act, it's the Land and Agricultural Development Bank Act, to the Minister of Finance to select suitable candidates from the list for appointment to the board of the Land Bank, and we list the names. Okay, is there any issue? A mover? Seconder. Thank you very much. That's done. Then on the program, which you have got, you would have seen the only real issue there is we try to cluster the tax bills to avoid people flying up and down. Right, the cost accommodation sometimes and so on. One of the reasons to repeat to new members that we meet at 10 is to encourage people not to come the night before, Momo. They can fly in the morning and so on. I know some people do that, among many other reasons. Now, the thing is that, unfortunately, as I explained yesterday, we have put the effort for the public hearings, and you cannot inconvenience the public, so we couldn't bring it together. The other thing is, let me stand up and say this. I would really like to stand up. I hope Cindy's noting. This is like, where's Linda Hensel? Any media here? Anybody from PMG? Yeah, call them in. PMG, you are here. Can you note this? Nothing else matters. You see, last week, Momo, you were not here. And you brought to us for the second time in the space of 7 days a document on the morning of the day that we are sitting. Now, the worst one was last week, Tuesday, because you brought us a whole lot of slides. And so we said, Momo, and you were not here. Cindy happened to be here. You see, the people who are here, they rotate. Like, Kathy comes here only for this book. Yesterday, there was Franz and Yanga. Next week, there will be somebody else. So the only person we could direct it to was Cindy. We said, Cindy, we direct it at you. We are now telling you, we are not going to ever anymore, we've tried for since 2014, entertain at a meeting on a Tuesday if the documentation hasn't got to us by, let's say, Thursday or Friday morning at the latest. But to come to us on that morning, we're going to call the meeting off. So from now on Monday night, I will communicate to her. I have a mandate from the committee to call a meeting off. Ellen will send a note out. Right? They're not going to do this anymore. The second thing we said to her is, why do you people bring us endless legislation? You're unable to deliver, Momo. On the FICA bill, on at least 3 occasions, Cindy contacted me, say, look, can we postpone something? Then there are parties here that think there's some conspiracy and all that, right? I don't have time for all that. I'm busy enough, right? So the issue was never about Cindy not doing a job. And can you put this down on record? We have previously said Cindy is an excellent parliamentary liaison officer. Nobody would know that more than the chairperson and the committee secretary. In fact, of the 5 committees I chaired, I'll say they're going to hide. She's the best I've ever encountered. She's available at any hour of the day. She comes back to you quickly with an SMS. She phones you if you phone her and she can't finish it. So basically, it was never addressed to Cindy. So to the extent Cindy got personally upset about it, Cindy August, in case the PMG doesn't know, I would like to apologize. So this is a TRT process, because she got very cheesed off with me. And Cindy and I know each other in another context, but the truth is, she's an excellent parliamentary liaison officer. So it has nothing to do with her. It was directed at you, Momo, because you bring this endless legislation here, right, and you can't deliver. Right. So I'm going to raise that to the minister when I meet him next week, by the way. Not about you, you're excellent. You're another person, by the way, like your team, generally. Very good. But you mean well. But I know how it is. You know, these endless amendments, and it's difficult. So it's not a reflection on you particularly. It's on your capacity to work, which is legendary in the movement and in the government. You are often referred to by other officials, by the way. Oh, you got Momo there. Oh, God. And we've been through you since the Municipal Systems Act. So it's not directed at anybody's integrity or capacity. You are a very good team on the whole. We disagree with you on many things, but not on the issue of your work ethic in general. So I want to make that clear. Cindy, would you like to make a speech? change. The only other issue is we agreed that we would draft a statement which has been distributed to all of you. On the statement, are there any comments on the SAA? Yes, Mr. Lees.
Mr. Chairman, there's no there's nothing contained there that we would disagree with, so that's fine. But we do think that there should be an action step at the end. And as we've been discussing for the last few days, we think the action step should be the emergency meeting that we're trying to get in place, as we will be calling an emergency meeting, and hopefully that would be on the 6th of September. But we haven't yet heard the response from the minister on that date. But that, we would like to see that action step added, please.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we agree with the contents of the statement. Fully support it.
What do you want, Mr. Lee? You want a date or something? What do you say? It's there. It says, we are presently engaging with the relevant stakeholders to look at the possibility of meeting with the Treasury before the 20th. That's what's said there.
Indeed it does, Mr. Chairman. I think it needs to be, we think it needs to be a little bit stronger than that.
What do you suggest?
The text would possibly read, it's phrased at the moment as if there's a kind of dialogue taking place, which indeed there is, but there should be a fallback position of the committee saying that we are presently engaging the relevant stakeholders to look into an emergency meeting with National Treasury and SAA to take place on or about the 6th of September. Something like that. Something a bit more robust than is there.
Fine. Members, what's your response? So you're agreeing with him. Nobody's responding.
Chair, I thought the way we have captured it is fine. Once we start to put dates and those days don't happen, what do we do? I mean, that framework that we have put in the statement suffices so that we don't really put ourselves on the spotlight. And the next thing, there are these other things, and that date passes. Yet there's a process to have that meeting taking place, and yet the date has passed, and it comes back to us. We have to answer in all those things. I thought the spirit of the statement is fine. And, you know, it will be working in progress. Thank you.
See, I think I concur with Pinky. It can still be the 6th. We're not ruling it out, but we're saying you don't want to put yourself in a corner and the 6th doesn't happen and it appears as if we've been ignored or something like that, because they make the reasons for that both the Treasury and SAA it's not possible for them to be with us here in Parliament. So if it's in the 6th, so it will happen, but it can be after the 6th, so let's not put in the case. There's nothing sacrosanct about the 6th.
Anything you want to say?
Mr. Chairman, there's nothing more that I can add except to say that we please note that we would liked it more strongly than that.
Is there anything else people say no? Can we move for the statement? Second. Now, excuse me. What happened was, as agreed, I did speak to the Chair of Public Enterprises. She's on sick leave, but she'll be back on Sunday, Monday at work. She said, no, that they also have a committee concerned about the matter. Since then, you would have seen in the public domain that Minister Lynn Brown has asked the management, if I'm correct, now I'm going by what I saw in the media, and I wasn't always paying attention, but as I understand it, and I haven't read this morning's papers, but Bill can correct me if I'm wrong. As I understand it, Minister Lynn Brown has asked the management of Eskom not to wait for the September board meeting, but to give the information to the Treasury. What I heard on the news this morning is that it has been done. What I also know is that the governing party, after two ministers, the three ministers, including Energy Minister Tina Turner-Peterson, to actually meet. And so this very morning, I understand, on a pre-scheduled meeting, Eskom is appearing before the committee. So I don't think that issue arises in the way it did yesterday. However, the chair of the committee on the public enterprises said last night she still feels we should have a joint meeting around the issues, which I think is a good idea, because Parliament can't like pretend it's not there in the public domain, and if Parliament doesn't look at these issues, they're seen as errant, not fulfilling our oversight role. So what I suggested to her is that in any case, it's Eskom falls under them. They can call a meeting, and then depending on the date they choose, either we can have it as a joint meeting, or we can send maybe two people, one from the majority party, one from the opposition, or maybe three or whatever, to go to that meeting. The other thing she raised with me last night is that she would like us to attend the meeting of Denel next Wednesday, because it affects Treasury and Denel, and I didn't read the thing, I just, on my press release, headline news in the business day. So I explained to her it's going to be very difficult with our program for us to have joint meetings. But what I suggested to her on behalf of the committee, which we've done, and we're going to do with the Board of Management Authority Bill, is that we send a small team or two people or so that we can forego to attend the joint meeting. So that is what I'm suggesting, that it's going to be difficult for us to suspend our meeting next Wednesday. But if people want to do that, that's the view of the majority, I'm cool with that. So basically on the first one, on the joint thing, we're suggesting that they convene the meeting over the recent spec, and then we, if we can attend, we attend as a joint group. Otherwise, we just send two representatives. Any questions about that? Comments? I take it we agree then. Okay, yes, Mr. Lees.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The Eskom, the documents, as you say, I also heard, had not been delivered. So there is some movement there. But, the damage that's been done to us as an economy is enormous. And I really agree with you that we can't, as Parliament, not be seen to be doing our oversight role there. So, Mr. Chairman, it's a split responsibility in the sense that the issue is split. You've got Kenneth Brown's unit, which we have oversight over, and you have Eskom, which the public enterprises have oversight over. And so this committee, I think, needs to be now robustly involved in establishing what the problems were, how they can be fixed, and how we can start to restore some confidence in the state apparatus, which has been so badly damaged by this particular incident. And so I think that if the public enterprises are going to have a meeting on Wednesday, I'm not sure now what our program is for next week. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, maybe I didn't follow earlier.
Let me just draw people's attention. I'm not steering you in any direction. I'm giving you information. You will recall we agreed to next Wednesday meet on the tax issues. We had asked the stakeholders to come back. We urged them to be here. That's quite important. I did tell her, look, because of the tax issues and because our... Look, can I suggest members just think about this release? That when members contribute, just think about this. We have a program we are unable to deliver on. So much so that we are meeting now on Fridays and in the afternoons, although that is now a I think in fairness, look, we'll talk about that. I will come back to the committee because I'm going to the... Yeah, no doubt. You'll issue it first before you then come to me. But the point I want to make is, can we just get some guidance here? Which is, it is true the procurement falls under our portfolio. But now those issues will come up all the time. So are we going to each time we have an entity in whichever department, covered by whichever committee, going to say we suspend our meeting so we go jointly there? That's all I want to know. What are we doing? Are we doing it on a case-by-case basis, or is it a standard thing? So remember, I'm very worried about this. I want to raise this, which is really frustrating. The committee takes decisions. They are adopted. And then the next time we meet, without clarity on why, we suddenly change them. There's no clarity on what we can always change things as circumstances change. Now, on this issue, we discussed this many times, Mr. Lees. It's not about the chief procurement officer. There were many bills. There are many bills that have a financial implication. At that stage, Mr. Lees, we said that will mean half of our time, two-thirds of our time will be spent in joint meetings. Because everything has a financial implication. Mr. Lees, I want to point out to you and other members, we're covering ground, we've covered it. Due respect to you, but we have to facilitate a meeting. It's my job to do it. So that you must give me a rational explanation for why we're suddenly changing. So, we've discussed this on the issue of endless bills. It comes from all parties. Let's discuss this matter. Two, we have experiences where we find it extremely difficult to get joint meetings. You will recall poor Alan and the poor chair tried for 7 months to get a committee to come and sit with us, even though we jointly agreed that the PBO would do the report, right? In the case of another matter, BEPS, do you know how difficult it is to get 8 committees together? I went through the whole process with you. Finally, we got 3 committees. Even then, up till the day of the meeting, the one committee chair suddenly turned up. He said he's not coming because he did something else. Bearing all that in mind, now, do you want to, having had all that discussion, tell us, what are you saying? Are you saying on this specific matter, or are you saying there's going to be procurement coming up everywhere? Transnet's going to come up soon as well, from what I can tell. So I have suggested a compromise, Mr. Lee, which is instead of calling off our meeting, we send one or two people. Maybe just, we can only afford one from the ANC. You can send as many as you want and go there on Wednesday. That was my suggestion. Let us at least finish. Do you see what I'm saying? Go ahead. Having said that, having reminded you of our previous discussions, now, can you please say what you want to say?
Mr. Chairman, you're simply reinforcing the position that we believe is so important, because we don't want to have to do this on a regular basis. We want to deal with this particular issue to set the precedent for future so that this committee doesn't have to get involved. That's exactly why it's important this time around for us to be heavily involved there, to sort out the processes that lead to these kinds of serious, very serious interruptions in our economic progress. And so, Mr. Chairman, I absolutely agree with you. We can't be involved in every procurement and every department. But there has to be a working relationship between a unit that we have oversight over and the other departments. And in this instance, that relationship broke down entirely to the point that the ministers were talking in public about. It is a crisis, Mr. Chairman. This is not the run-of-the-mill disagreement. This is a crisis. And I believe that this committee must play its full oversight role now to prevent exactly what you say we can't handle. And I absolutely agree with you. I have no problem with that. We can't possibly be involved in on a day-to-day basis. And so I am suggesting that in this instance, it is a crisis. It is a point where we need to establish how it happened, why it happened, and how it should not happen again. And then we can go forward and leave the procurement unit to do its job with the other departments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Before Vicky and Theresa come in, can I just check? The committee chairperson said you will get a letter inviting us to Wednesday's meeting. Did you get it? I think it's coming to you this morning. She's on sick leave because she's writing to us for a joint meeting. So I will have to formally reply. So that's why I'm saying let's not defer it. Well, we can defer it to Friday. Pinky?
Thank you, Chair.
thank you, Chair. I think I agree with your approach and the how, as a committee yesterday, reflected on some of these things. And I don't think, Chair, we have reached a state of a crisis, because even before we could act on some of the things, the ministers already were starting to come together and deal with the matters concerned. And I think I agree with you to say it will never be sustainable as this committee to start to look at every procurement activity in various departments, because what is the role of a portfolio committee? Because they are doing in-year monitoring activities of their own entities and their own departments. And you also, over and above this, have SCOPA that will also look into other things, ex post facto. So, of course, there will be those kind of things, and as you have been dealing with them as the chair, from time to time when things were coming up, whether through media or whatever, you brought the issue to our attention, and at some point we would say, just talk to the chairperson of that committee or do whatever, and see if these things cannot be attended to. So that must be the principle. If it comes to our attention, we can then say, maybe, Chair, talk to the chairperson of this portfolio committee, let them follow up during their meeting on this matter and that matter, and then let's make sure it happens. Alternatively, there's also this other thing that you brought to us yesterday, to say, members, there will be instances where one or two members of our committee can be deployed to go and sit in that to deal with a specific matter. And I think that should be the principle that we uphold, rather than to start to do all this. It will not really be sustainable. And even on our program, we'll have a lot of things outstanding and put ourselves under pressure or do shoddy work on some of the things that we wanted to do. So I agree with the principles that we agreed on, and I thought maybe let's move in that spirit. Thank you.
Okay. I think I would have agreed with Mazambani if there was nothing coming from the ministers. The ministers are on top of this of this thing for now. So we should be very careful not to end up again inadvertently saying that the ministers are not going to be able to resolve this thing. Let's leave it to them. They've said they are on top of it. You had officials having a public spat, and then their principals immediately came in and reined them in, and there's a process which is taking place. That's one. That's an executive level. But at an oversight level, let's give the committee responsible a chance to deal with this matter. And we should be very careful not to start presenting problems for ourselves, where our colleagues in other committees are going to see us as this committee, which thinks that we are a super committee, we are going to be overseeing the matter doing and so on. So let's give them a chance. And I don't know what criteria we're going to use to say we're intervening, we're not intervening, right? Let's give them a chance. Let's assess what they have said, what they have done. If we are still not happy, then we can come in as a standing committee on finance. So I think that's the question that one would like. We shouldn't start creating problems for ourselves where people are just going to be resistant, not looking at the issue, but saying, why do we think that they can't do their work? Even this thing of sending somebody to their committee to go and watch over them and so on. It may be good just to listen, but let's give them a chance.
I think I must share. No. If you're saying that, then then we have to come to a halt. Firstly, I would like to explain, especially to new members, actually in many respects, unless we want to alter the constitution and the rules of parliament, we have more powers than the executive has on entities in some respects. There is a shareholder management bill that's still going through the thing. So our right to exercise oversight is there in the constitution, which the majority party shaped. And if you look at the majority party's conception of parliament, an activist parliament, a people's rooted parliament, and so on, the majority party must change its views on the matter, and until it does, I, as a representative of the majority party as the chair, am bound by that. I have to shape that, but maybe we were wrong. Then maybe we should alter the constitution. So firstly, let's get some things clear, which I don't think this committee must delude itself about. Firstly, it is absolutely correct for both committees to want to exercise oversight over the Chief Procurement Officer and ESCOM. That's what we are here for. The Constitution of South Africa and the legislation is very clear. We are possibly one of the most, in theory and in law, most powerful parliamentary committee system in the world. I'm told the US has got more powers than we have in very few other countries. Because we came late to establish our constitution, because of our history of minority rule and suppression and oppression, we created a very strong parliamentary system. Now, maybe 23 years later we want to change it, but, you know, that's something for the ANC to decide in December next year. For now, it is very clear. What we are doing is perfectly correct. It's been done since 94. In many respects, in the first 10 years, this parliament did things that exploited and fully used the powers and functions that are entitled, that are given to committees. And in recent years, we've been failing. So firstly, we're very clear. What we are doing is perfectly correct. Secondly, throughout the period that we've been here, we've had situations where committees sit together and or they send representatives. Now, if we say we shouldn't do this on this matter, then what are we going to do with the Border Management Authority bill? That's what we said. We cannot sit with them. I've spoken to the chairperson of Home Affairs. He has agreed. Thirdly, in this particular context, I think they asked us, as the chairperson spoke to me yesterday and said that she wants us to attend the meeting because it affects Treasury and DNA. She said that the committee secretary would send us a letter this morning. Presumably it will come to us. So it was a request. Fourthly, the rules of Parliament are clear. I can go and sit in any committee and I can speak. I have full rights. But obviously we're bound by study group positions of our respective parties, and I can't just go to another committee and speak outside of its mandate, whichever party I'm from. So I don't think we should go the line that Sifiso and Pinky were hinting at, but I think Pinky's withdrawn it, because that will create huge problems. Then we'll have to call ESCOM separately here and separately there. And that's the other option. We have to go all the sides wrong. So I think what we do is we clear. The majority in this committee, and I agree with this view, are saying that it's very difficult for us. Firstly, we should start with this, Mr. Lee. There's no difference between you and us on the gravity and seriousness of what's going on, too. Secondly, the difference may be between your party and ours, what I can tell, is that we feel that what's happened over the last 24 hours has considerably improved the situation. When I spoke to the minister last night, which I should say, I said, look, this issue has come up, and you know, I gather you've got the documentation. He said, yes, we want to see what it is, but we've got it, right? Now, I really think the difference may be between us on what the meaning is of what's happened in the last 24 hours. But we, I think, both agree that there's been a considerable move. I actually heard over TV the minister say she's instructed, and she will go to the board meeting in September of ESCOM and explain to them why she felt that they don't have to wait for their board meeting. So, also I need to say that we have been requested to attend, and whether I get it in writing or not, Dipo, I'll just SMS it to say that we can't call up our meeting. I agree, we can't. And there's nothing wrong in sending representatives. I would like to plead with Pule to consider one only from the ANC, because the tax bill, we can't forego more than one. And you are free to send all your members. No one's stopping you. You already have a very active member who writes to the media on every little thing. So you've got your members there. The other thing I think we should agree on that the DA does, which is not really acceptable. You see, what you do is your members in a particular committee may not be performing. Now, because it has some or other financial implication, you bring it here. We keep telling you, you have a member in that committee, that member must raise it there. But if that member doesn't perform, you come here and say, the finance committee should call so and so and so on. So what I'm saying is, that's not acceptable, Mr. Lee. You can raise it, I can't stop you, but the answer is going to be simple. Don't you have a committee member? There were two. They must sort the problem. They're not performing, go to your work and sort it out. So I'm saying in short, I don't think there's any disagreement on the gravity of what's happened. We also agree, at least I do, that we need to look at the issue so that we learn the lessons from it. Thirdly, they've got a very good committee chair, frankly. She's an NEC member, moreover. She carries a lot of political clout and very experienced. She's been in the legislature before. And they will settle the matter and we will attend. So in short, Pula, you will consult and decide who goes, and the DA can send all its members, but we would prefer, since it's a tax issue, Mr. Lees, that you at least remain behind, because you have technical expertise. You know, we can't prescribe to you, but Mr. Topham does as well. So you can send Mania, he loves that sort of thing. A lot of media coverage, and he would love it. I mean, he will be waiting for when the media comes and choose when he speaks and so on. So, you know, he's the best guy. No, he hasn't been good. Good shot, Pinky. That's the best boy face. Listen, but on a serious note, I don't think any of our members will disagree, and Mr. Topham. You bring some technical expertise, you know, on tax issues, and you both argue in the tire industry. You know, it's interesting because you know things. So we're not so narrow-minded as to say, because it's you or because it's him, that we're going to say no. So, you know, come to the tax things. If you don't come to other issues, it's fine. Tax issues we like to have. Well, I like to have you around. You help me a lot. I'm sure others of us do. Yeah, good. Anyway, we leave it to that. So having said that, this is the program for now. And then if there are changes, they'll be very minor. Right. Now let's move to the FSR bill. Just remind me, Kathy, where are we? Welcome, Roy. Yeah, sorry.
The program. We haven't heard from the minister about Tuesday or anything like that.
Oh, all right.
I'm sorry.
I did speak to the minister about that. You know, to be fair to him, he's speaking to a million different people at different. So I'm being very cautious, right? So let me choose. As I understood what he said, in a very fleeting exchange, and I cannot be held for accurately representing what he said. He said he's away from Friday to Monday, as he understands. Maybe his diary at the time I spoke to him. He further said, I said, look, it seems you didn't come back to me to say you agreed on Tuesday the 6th. He said, did I say that? No, what I meant is on Tuesday, I probably meant, he said, on Tuesday the 6th, I'll give you a date. So I don't think he meant to say, okay, is that clear? To say that it's definitely the 6th. And he was a bit guarded. He said, look, did I say that to them? I thought I said that I'll speak to them when I get back on the 6th and we'll set a date. So he will come back to us on that. So that's why we left it open. That's what I meant by negotiations. That's what he meant by negotiations, right? So what I will do, in fairness, I'll get him to phone you when he's back. So that, you know what, I don't want to be a message carrier. But the committee will decide when it's appropriate. The other thing I'd like to suggest to you, Mr. Lee, is there may be, between now and Tuesday, some developments, which I'm sure the media will pick up, right? That might, like what happened in the last 24 hours, jig you to say maybe you want to review your call for an emergency meeting. So let's leave things in abeyance until events unfold. I will get him to phone you. In fact, I'll SMS him now to tell him to ring you and then ring me, and then we'll bring the issue to the committee. The other thing to say is there's no disagreement between us, right? That the issues around the deregistration and the issue around the implications of the advert. I don't know whether you want to mandate Advocate Jenkins, but Treasury itself says, Momo, can you help us? The advert in and of itself, and I saw this in one of the pieces last night, is not a problem. It's if they apply to get a loan from the markets that they will have to go through certain PFMA or other regulations, that would require the minister's approval. You don't know. Okay, fine. So basically, that's how I understand it. So there's no disagreement on that. So let him come back to you on Tuesday, and then the committee can discuss it. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry, I'm just talking. We remain concerned that we'd really like to have it on Tuesday, but we understand circumstances determine much of what we do in life, and we can't always control everything. And the fact is that there's a great deal of concern from ministerial level to committee level, and so that in itself is a good indicator. So thank you for the attempts that are being made. Thank you.
Just get back to the episode. Where are we, if I remember, we're on...
Thank you, Chair. We are on Chapter 4, Financial Sector Conduct Authority, and it's Clause 58.1. We had started on 58.1.
Oh, yeah, it's my two lines. Yeah. From, I thought we finished. Yeah, we stopped at 58.1. Now, the second one, I remember saying, this thing is not clear, eh? I don't know what this actually means. Can you explain this thing? Do members want to comment before I do? 58.2. Any comments from anybody? No. In that case, can you explain what that means, man? 58.2. Mr. Topham? Yes, I'm getting sick.
We did discuss the statute briefly, and we said that you're going to clarify the whole Section 108, and that there are improvements to this clause. I think we touched on 58.2 on the day.
Yes, Chair. On this particular issue, I think it would also be useful to get guidance from you on when you do want us to cover that issue. You've given us 2 weeks. We have coordinated with the DGI. We have our position. We have the presentation. We also just want to make sure that we give you adequate preparation with that. So if you want us to circulate it or whether we do it cold, but we'll look for your guidance on that matter.
DGI is here. Right. So basically, what does the committee feel? Do you want to deal with it now or later, or do you want to get a text first, or what do you want? Mr. Lee feels that you get a text. What do other people feel? Why are you looking at me quizzically, Pule? I'm asking for advice so that, you know, people can help me so that they participate more in the committee meeting. No, you are, obviously, you've been out of the country, right? Can we also pass a resolution here, man, that Pinky Kekane only leaves the country 5 times a month, no more. And when she comes back, she must ensure she gives a present to the chair in the first instance, the whip, and everybody else apart from Mr. Mania. Okay. So then, Vicky, we know you. Okay, so basically, I don't really know. Maybe, you know, personally, I like to look at something before if I can. So is there a separate text? But now we don't want DPI rolling in and out of Parliament and flying in and out unduly. So can we deal, have you discussed the policy issues? No, then can I suggest, colleague? Oh, I thought you meant just this section. You mean you'll have discussed what we asked you to do. Now, can you report to Mr. Mania and write notes? We are not, because he's not here, going to open up. I told Shivambu that I'm unapologetic about what I said to Shivambu, right? I say it to my own comrades, right? Nobody is special here. Now, Mr. Mania is no different from anybody else. I know what he's going to do. We can't coordinate this meeting discussions by checking. Mr. Mania, are you free? Can we discuss it? So will you report to him? Make some notes for him. Who makes notes? Give him the minutes. PMG, give him the minutes. Right. Now, we're not going to entertain it, so you better speak to him. Right. Over to you. Can you explain to us, you're dealing with the issues are, the broader issues, you're dealing with everything, is that right? That why is it that the regulator, the credit regulator, is not included in this dispensation? Right, completely. Why do you need a separate credit regulator? Is it true that the credit regulator and or the department's unhappy with the provisions here and so on? We have covered a lot of this already, colleagues, because I've done my own work, I've spoken to the minister and the DG, and I reported to you, and those sorts of issues. So we get this thing taken considerably forward, and then members exhaust this thing, that we don't keep coming back to this issue unless we have to, consensually. Over to you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Can you go on to that? Okay, so we have prepared a presentation which talks us through these issues as well. Broadly speaking, and just taking a step back, there has been a lot of discussion around the role of the credit regulator relative to the conduct authority and the prudential authority. and significant engagement has been taking place between the respective departments and the regulators in terms of how that cooperation and coordination can happen. I think that it's a misnomer to say that the credit regulator is not under Twin Peaks. I think the credit regulator is firmly under Twin Peaks, brought in through the described relationships in terms of how these respective agencies operate. The question, though, is, and I think this has been a lot in the media and there's been a lot of speculation and a lot of comments, is whether these two agencies should in fact, and specifically the Conduct Authority and the credit regulator should merge. We have taken the view between departments that at this stage that would not be appropriate on the grounds that, the broadly speaking, the Conduct Authority has got a lot of work to do in setting up a new agency anyway. The credit regulator is an operating agency. The two agencies, in the way that the Treasury agencies operate, from a purely, even in terms of whether they can take their own enforcement action, for example, how appeals are heard, it's currently very different to how the DTI agency operates. So to merge those, practically speaking, would be an incredible hurdle. Not to say impossible, and not to say that I think over time it's something we are going to work towards. But for now, we're talking about right now. And so what we will speak through here is what we have provided for in terms of the Twin Peaks Bill. There is, of course, the question around, do we go far enough? And I think that is then, of course, open to the debate. So starting then on the agreed principles for regulating the financial sector, and these are the underlying principles between the two departments, providing for proportionate, risk-based, system-wide approach to regulating the financial sector, to level the regulatory playing field. So in other words, we're saying that if you're a credit provider who is a bank versus a credit provider who is a, well, non-bank, which could be a retail or it could be a corner store, your regulatory obligations should be commensurate to the risk that you're bringing into the system, not because of the fact if you're a bank or a non-bank. Minimize fragmentation and regulatory silos, that's obviously been a main priority area. Support and strengthen coordination mechanisms between the respective agencies. And then, of course, operational independence. And this is not just a priority in terms of the Conduct Authority and the credit regulator. It's an instilled principle across all of each of our agencies as provided for within the Twin Peaks Bill. But recognizing, having said that, operational independence does not mean that agencies can operate completely outside of a policy framework. And that policy framework needs to be clearly spelled out in the governing law. The achievement of the objectives, and I think this is where, again, this is a more, these are general Twin Peaks principles, and again, bringing the credit regulator under this umbrella, where the achievement of the objectives of one regulator should not be at the expense of achievement of the other. So if you're achieving stability, that should not compromise consumer protection or conduct. If you are achieving prudential safety and soundness, that should not be at the expense of consumer protection. On the other hand, we shouldn't be protecting consumers so much that it could introduce systemic risk. Minimizing the potential for regulatory overlap or underlap, I think this has also been one of the main areas of contention, which is if we have regulators which are, in effect, regulating the same underlying entity, how do we make sure that we don't duplicate, conflict, or miss something altogether and something slips between the cracks just because the coordination, we thought someone else was doing it and we have missed it. So this is what, based on those principles, this is what's been agreed in terms of how those principles get translated into the bill. the Reserve Bank and the Prudential Authority should regulate credit providers for stability and safety and soundness with the intensity of that oversight on a risk basis. So in other words, something that a credit provider regulated in terms of the Credit Act is still subject to the Prudential Authority for prudential soundness and the SARB for stability. The credit regulator and the conduct authority will both regulate credit providers for conduct. But they do so in different ways and with a different focus. And importantly, the conduct authority will complement and support the actions or the role of the credit regulator. So how do we give effect to this? We say that thinking about the language of the bill, where we talk about the product and we talk about the service provided in relation to that product. So if we think about insurance, the insurance policy is the product. To the extent that policy is marketed, sold, distributed, there's advice given on it, those are all services provided in relation to the product. So if we think about what that means in terms of credit, the credit agreement as a product, so in other words, interest rate caps, that's related to the product itself. That is under the ambit of the credit regulator. But the services provided in relation to that product, in other words, if you give advice on relating to a credit agreement, that would be under the ambit of the conduct authority. The conduct authority, in addition to this, because the approach, the TCF, the treating customers fairly approach, goes wider, much wider than just looking at the product. It looks at the provider itself and says, do you have the right checks and balances in place? Are you making the right decisions to make sure that even in the way that you design the product and you structure that product, you are doing so in the interest of consumers? That TCF function for credit will also sit with the conduct authority. Next slide, please. And this is then given effect through multiple different clauses. These clauses, the drafting of these clauses has furthermore also been agreed between the respective departments. I'll pause here. I'm not sure if the drafting itself is necessary at this stage to go through. But I can say that it affects the definitions of credit, financial product, financial service, as well as the section that we've just been discussing, 58.2, and then the standard setting powers. Chair, I just wanted to get one guidance, please. Having gone through the principles, and just specifying that we have agreed as well on the drafting to give effect to those principles, but I'm not sure it's necessary or if you're wanting us to go through those clauses at this stage.
Drafting we can deal with. If we don't agree with the principles, then we might want to change the drafting. But let's hear from DTI first, whether you agree or disagree or what.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. Yes, we really agree with the document that has just been presented, and it's a document that has been worked on, by both departments together with their respective regulators. So, yeah, in principle, we agree, and I think the issue around drafting, will only be worked on in order to make sure that it tallies well with the policy imperatives. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yes, Vicky? Anybody else? No.
I'm not taking you back, and my apology for having not been part of the meeting. Just to get an understanding, I'm not sure whether I understood the presenter correctly. On the role of the NCR, is NCR also going to be included in the TINFIX, though it's not going to be for lack of a better word, collapsed into something that it's like what we saw, isn't it, that when we said Twin Peaks, you have this arm and that arm, and NCR was also falling from our trip, Momo. NCR was falling under the, what is it? No. In terms of the, yeah, they were falling under FCA. So I'm saying, here from what you were saying, it will not be possible for us to dissolve it and make it to, but it will still exist, but comply. Something like that? It's something that I missed, and I'm sorry, I'm taking you back. But I'm able to follow on all your presentations.
So you're exactly right, and there has been contention about this about the literal interpretation of Twin Peaks, meaning that there are two peaks. But actually, I think there's what we refer to as a Twin Peaks framework, which is more functional responsibility. So the SARB has a functional responsibility for stability for all the sector. The Prudential Authority has got the functional responsibility for safety and soundness for the whole sector. The conduct authority, again, for the whole sector. The credit regulator then, yes, I think will be sitting alongside, and so not merged, but aligned. And so what we've had to work hard to do is ensure that, given we're looking for this cross-sectoral approach and a common approach and a harmonized approach across the sector, it's not about, in this particular example, whether you're a bank or a non-bank. If you're bringing risk to the system and you're bringing risk to customers, you should face the similar regulatory obligations. So that is what we've described here, is how we intend for those regulators to work together within the Twin Peaks framework. Again, it asks, as I've asked in the... The question, though, of course, which is this something we're going to need to monitor, because we want to ensure that we want to ensure regulatory effectiveness. And as has been described, there have been changes internationally because of the challenges that emerge by having separate agencies. But I think that's going to be that's for something further to discuss.
Excuse me, Mr. Topham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand specifically from the scores where it actually is the full impact of that. Obviously, financial products linked to credit products are going to be regulated by the Conduct Authority, and if due from the NSR, that's pretty clear. I think our position is that one of the reasons for this clause, because the existing system works, it does work, and the motivation for this piece of legislation was to harmonize and to collaborate and cooperation to be improved, having under one heading. So I think we all, including yourselves, probably agree that the NCR should fall under this framework in the future, if not now. But for practical reasons, it's been excluded. We're not 100% on board with that motivation, and it's almost like there's a silo. The silo's been protected, etc. But for now, so be it. But going forward, if we're going to proceed with trying to not have multiple one entity subject to multiple regulators as such, which was the purpose of the Act, we've got to look at bringing that to conclusion probably sooner rather than later. And obviously in this specific clause, the whole wording 108, we get a 108, we can understand it a bit better.
TTI, what's your name again, sorry?
Supermanda. Supermanda, yes. Thank you, Chair. I think just for to provide clarity to the honourable members, I think in the bill we have provided for a chapter on coordination.
that chapter gives an indication in terms of how the respective, you know, regulators will coordinate and ensure that there's effective regulation. And that's well captured in the chapter dealing with coordination. So there's no confusion in terms of how the different regulations should be working. So I just wanted to make that clarity. And that was an agreement which was actually taken from a policy point of view. And as we go along with the drafting, it will actually become clear in terms of how they are going to work. And I mean, we have a similar provision in relation to, for example, Section 17, Sub 4 of the National Credit Amendment Act in relation to the register of banks. And it's actually, I would say, it's working very well. And this is a kind of cooperation, both, I mean, on a number of issues, enforcement, you know, and a lot of things. So that's what is actually intended by that chart. Thank you.
So I think, like we've spelled out, if we had started from scratch, we would have preferred one harmonized system. Because, so let's be clear, what is the optimal? Even Twin Peaks, I think what we're saying is there needs to be a phased approach. But certainly down the line, even if you look at one, there are risks that happen. And on the one hand, we can deal with the prudential risk because that will be done solely by the staff. When it comes to market conduct, and I've said this in committee, I've felt whether it's the FSB currently, whether it's the NCR, they're not tough on market conduct, as tough as they should be. There's lots of weaknesses. Now, it's going to be important that the coordination actually is more effective around clear issues. The market conduct really requires the industry to behave, requires tough action on payday lenders. We've had big weaknesses on the credit side, but there's been too much reckless credit. Having the law is not going to be enough. So all of those, it's going to be important that there's alignment between the two. When it comes to some of the agencies, the appeal mechanism or the tribunal, etc., like Kathy said, they work differently. But it would help if they do get harmonized down the line. We think it's not for right at the start, and they are carve-outs. But to the extent that it's carve-outs, it also does bring in some risks. So let me give an example. One of the clauses which I've said, which we do want to bring, is that if you keep this separate, you must have concurrence on issues. Because, for example, you could decide that credit needs to be kept. That has an implication because 90% of your lending is done by banks. So you've got three regulators. There needs to be alignment in policy, because that alone could cause systemic risk if there isn't concurrence and these things are not thought through correctly. So we do have a whole lot of mitigating mechanisms. The question for me is, does it go far enough? I mean, there is a clause, as I've said, on concurrence, which I think we want to bring in on all issues as they affect, especially SIFIs. So I think we think this is a workable compromise. It's not ideal, but I think it reflects the reality.
Chair, maybe this matter will be resolved when we look at the policy imperative that addresses coordination. Because then it will close the gap of tightening the belt, either on the role of what the banks are playing in reckless lending or generally looking at market conduct. We need to phase it in such a way that there is a harmonious how can I put it? You know, a process that will make it easy for all the structures to meet and look at where the challenges are. So maybe when we deal with the policy on coordination, we can further engage more. Because I think if you agree, you understand the gist of trying to create that harmonization and concurrence in the process. So actually, I'm pleased, Chair, that they found one another, the DTI and National Treasury. No. So we need that. You know, they say, you know how difficult. And you know why I emphasize on coordination? Because I know how difficult it's going to be to coordinate those meetings that put reporting standards. And how different approaches are going to be when you deal with the question of market conduct, specifically on market conduct. There will be different approaches and different views. There will be a different way that EDD deals with the competition market and how they will want to penalize the competition market. So there is a need for a structure that coordinates that, plans together and facilitates that. So we're moving closer to that. But we need to do it in a phasing approach. So I don't know whether you catch the point I'm making. And to me, it covers it in a way. So I'm very pleased. So if there's any other issue, you might have not agreed on, it's very important that you raise it with us. We need to know it. Because it's very important that this process becomes very smooth. And we don't look across each other differently, because it's going to be very important how coordination is done in this process. Thank you.
Mr. Topham?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a two-finger. Everybody's saying the same thing, but the words are no more important. This is a workable compromise, because it would be quite easy to have left existing authorities effectively separate with a chapter in a piece of legislation for compromise. But the NCR have got away with it, not a temporary pass, which is not ideal to have this regulator outside when all the other regulators are effectively being brought inside. So that compromise that they've got is a temporary thing, because the best way to get this compromise to work, the intention of the legislature here is to bring all these regulators effectively under one body, so there won't be need for sending a motorboat to the other island to discuss issues where there's compromising questions. So I think the understanding is that this is a temporary workable compromise, but it's not ideal for the long-term future, so that people in that other island get the message via the diplomatic pouch that coming one of these days we're building a permanent bridge between the island and the Twin Peaks Island, not just going to be a chapter on compromise and stuff like that.
Excuse me. What I want to ask is, where is the NCR here, Superman?
Chair, the NCR, unfortunately, they were double booked. They are presenting in our portfolio committee on the financial and non-financial quarterly, issues. Both the CEO and the whole executive, as we speak. I can assure the committee that, what has been agreed here is what they have been part of, and we've worked together with National Treasury to ensure that we deliver actually on the mandate, because the ministers, I think they acted on this because of, ensuring that the two departments, speak in one voice. And bring something that is sort of agreed upon by both departments to the committee, so that the committee can actually engage, both departments on it and then agree.
Okay. The thing is that we have identified this as a theme, right? At this stage, I don't think there's any new issues emerging. So unless new issues emerge, we're more or less done with this issue, right? But we need to just remember that there's a strand of opinion out there, civil society opinion. There are organizations out there who feel that the National Credit Regulator should be, not drawn in too tightly into this dispensation. Now, can you just remind ourselves, why did they raise this moment? Just remind us, what are the issues they raised?
Kathy, do you want to come in on that?
So the concern that was being raised was that the credit regulator is taking tough action on banks, and therefore in protection of those banks, the Treasury is, well, the Reserve Bank through the Treasury is exploiting the Twin Peaks framework to bring in the credit regulator, absorb it into the conduct authority, so that it can take softer action on banks. Obviously, I must say that's not our view.
Chair, I think another issue, Chair, is an issue around the avoidance of forum shopping. We wanted the legislation to be clear under the Twin Peak to say, in respect of credit, the NCR will definitely be, you know, in coordination with the Market Conduct Authority, will actually be dealing with credit related issues. Because normally in practice, you know, industries will do forum shopping and argue that no, this particular regulator does not actually, when they have actually committed some misconduct, you know, they will argue that no, you don't actually deal with this. But how we have actually couched in the bill is to say that NCR can deal with credit-related issues, but anything above or outside that, you know, in order to ensure that we don't leave anything or any regulatory, you know, loophole, then the Market Conduct Authority should actually be able to regulate to ensure that there's, you know, full, you know, regulatory enforcement, and so that to ensure that there are no loopholes in the legislation. Thank you.
Excuse me. So, Kathy, how would you answer to people who say what you say they say? In what way can we tell them no? The oversight of the bank by the credit regulator will be as effective as ever. It's even strengthened by what we've got here. And then secondly, say the Market Conduct Authority will work with the credit regulator, and together they will exercise greater oversight. Because, colleagues, this thing about having effective oversight over the banks in the interest of the poor and the financial customers generally is a major thing that most of us, maybe even across political parties, largely agree on. Because we would like to put some such thing in the report. Where's Antonia? Is she here? This is part of our report, right? About the role of the credit regulator, how it's incorporated in this bill, or catered for in this bill, and how the new dispensation is going to be more effective. So how would we explain that? In what sense is it more effective? In what sense is it more efficient? Yeah, they can.
Can we look at the National Credit Act, the current one? You'll see how it has tightened on reckless lending. It's the latest version. Because you will see that some of the fears that industry and parties, political parties, are raising about effective oversight has been addressed. And I'm speaking because of my previous life when we dealt with it. You know, because the current act as it stands actually addresses your fears on oversight. So if they can bring that piece of legislation and we look at specific sectors, and remember, you've got an overarching role that is played by the provincial authority. So it's by the provincial authority. So. I'm not sure. I don't want to get much into the debate, but I wanted you to see it physically and yeah.
Not the whole bill. Kathy, can you arrange that with Sipomandla, right? Just the relevant clauses. What you see for our report, Thandi, we have to be clear that what we're doing here actually strengthens oversight over the banks in the interest of the poor and the financial customers. And all I'm saying is, I don't really have a view on the matter. I think what we've done is fine. And now that DTI, this is the first time we've got this level of consistency or concurrence, if you like, between the two departments. I think it's fine. But we need to ensure that together the Market Conduct Authority and the credit regulator are far more effective in the new model than the situation has been until now. And I accept what Tandy's saying. The prudential side also strengthens it. But I'm just saying that we cover our flanks because there are people within the alliance structures also, as you know, who are not happy about the credit regulator's role in this. The credit regulator itself came to complain, and they've been lobbying the chair of the committee, and I'll keep telling them, come to the... You know, I spoke to Rob, and I spoke to the DG and so on, and I spoke to Momo to meet with them and so on. So now I think we've made significant progress. So all we're saying is that we need to cover our backs, as it were. Not in an opportunistic way, but be clear that the effects... So what we could have from you, Kathy, is about... three or four arguments about why the new system strengthens oversight over the banks, and then we insert it into our report after Antonia looks at it and, you know, tweaks it and then gives it to the politicians to make the final decisions on. Okay. Yeah, yeah, you okay?
So yeah,
so this is the team that we
So, I mean, if you remember also, I mean, when we came with this in 2011, there was shock and awe, okay, in the banking and other sectors, in the sense that up to the current situation, effectively banks, for example, are regulated by only prudentially. Okay. So firstly, we've really stepped up the prudential in terms of higher capital standards and so on, Basel III. Secondly, there's a provision around financial stability and the classification of SIFIs, which becomes pretty onerous. Thirdly, we've said market conduct is so important that we want to have a separate and dedicated regulator because we ourselves don't trust the SARB. To do prudential, they must focus on that. We wouldn't trust the SARB with market conduct, just like we might not trust currently other regulators on prudential. So they've got in a sense, we've tripled the regulatory provisions around. Now, that's over and above what's there for anti-money laundering mechanisms and so on. We've got measures, of course, to try and mitigate against too big to fail and sort of make banks come to the fiscus. And let me say, it's not just the banks who are squealing. I see there's a new input from the JSE. They also can't handle the fact that there'll be a SIFI and certain things apply. So in a way, people are raising new issues, but they must know they are SIFI and these provisions will apply. So, you know, we've been very tough on the industry. Now perhaps there's already shock and awe. It's been long past for the banks. They felt it overseas as well. So they've come to accept that's the reality. Perhaps other players don't understand just how, like the words, intrusive, intensive, and effective the new provisions are. So it is a much tighter regime that applies. Having said that, Chair, there's never a guarantee that there won't be a crisis, there won't be failures. And I think, so obviously we're trying to reduce the pressure on the fiscus, on the one hand, and on the economy as a whole, but also I think we must accept that there are still risks in the system. So let me give you an example. When people give credit, they've been issuing insurance. There's credit-linked insurance. We have a paper there. At the moment, the NCR really can, if I know what the law, they tried to expand it, but effectively, you know, you've got the credit product, but then you've got insurance. That is best done by currently the FSB. Can you deal in these issues? In doing credit, can you also try and do insurance regulation? Because the people who do reckless lending and so on have a plethora of services which they package. You know, if you have a paying social grants, the person who's there
to make loans to pensioners. So untangling that, because there's a lot of ruthless operators out there, and I think the coordination mechanisms that we have is going to force regulators to come together and look at all these perspectives.
Antonio, you got the gist of it, right? So we will come back to you if we have to. Now, I think JSE has come with yet another submission. I think you hear. I think we should get some balance here. The sort of committee has come to a stage now where the broad approach is set out. And we must agree to disagree now. We'll allow what we have said, since JSE has not been here, is we'll allow you, as we've done on every bill, we will give it to every stakeholder when we've finished it, right? It's at that stage that we will give you another chance to respond, but it'll have to be in writing. And I have no doubt, for example, that a statement will emerge that we rushed through this bill on the issue of the national credit regulator. Somebody's not here, so therefore, you know, and so on. Sorry? Yeah, but the statement will go out that we're rushing the bill, we don't want to discuss the credit regulator, and so on. I have no doubt. Look, I have to deal with the press. I don't even respond now. You know what? We don't have a full-time media officer here, and I've got better things to do in life. So unless somebody wants to become, we're looking for a media officer to sit here and reply every time. I can just dictate something, but it's not my job to, you know, when I've got a million things to do. So what we are saying is that basically in our report to Parliament, Antonia, we have to be very clear that the new dispensation, unless we're challenging what the two of them are saying, actually strengthens the credit regulator in many respects and oversight. Okay? So the point's made, and Cathy will give you a little draft. You work on it, and then we will finally shape it. So having said that, because the JSC has come in, I think we just want to know whether what the committee feels, that maybe we should give them a few minutes, but can we now draw to a close on this? That actually we cannot have, we're entering a period of co-legislation now. I think everybody's been given a fair chance. I have tried to reach out to civil society stakeholders, but they say they've raised the issues, and you see, unlike you, the people who are here, they don't have the staff, the resources, the funding to be here all the time. So we have allowed Basa and Asisa and so on to come, so we won't stop that process because we do on every bill. But at the same time, we have to get real now. We're entering a terrain of final policy making, and we will agree to disagree. There are some principles on which you won't pass. I don't think the committee, I think the majority of the committee will pass on. This 2008 global crisis was a disaster, and we're still bearing the consequences. Two, there is no guarantee it will not happen again. Three, our banks are part of a globalized financial system, so if you perform well, something goes wrong in the other end of Mongolia, we suffer. Right? So we have to protect ourselves as far as possible. Four, you know what? There are very few parliamentary committees in this parliament, let alone anywhere else in the world, that allows this degree of participation. So you've got a good opportunity. And finally, there's no rule. It's finally left to the committee as a majority and, you know, the chair to decide. It's not like objective criteria. I think we've given you enough opportunity now. But since you have flown in, and again, you see here, you send us a document on the 30th of August, and you're rolling here the following day. Nothing changes. What do you expect? Antonio has another look at it. Dumasani is not even here. But since you are here, I would like to suggest to the committee, and if you disagree, we'll give you an opportunity to just take us through these issues. We're not sure why it hasn't come earlier. Who's here from the JSC? Why didn't you send us earlier? Why did you send it yesterday?
We've got apologies for that. We were under pressure. We only received the revised bill during July. and the regulations, so we had to comment on what we received. The version we received in November, we commented on, and we presented to you in November. There were four principal issues of concern that we raised then. Since that time, we've had productive discussions with National Treasury, and we've reached consensus on most of those issues. There's, however, three remaining issues of principle, the one being the exemption from licensing that we dealt with when we presented in November. We thought that that may be taken out from the bill. Unfortunately, that has not been the case. It still remains in Section 49, Capital A. And those
before you go on, I understand what you're going to come to.
Yes.
As complex as they are. I'm just not clear. Why did this come yesterday? That as far as I know, the bill that we got, Alan, you distributed to all the stakeholders. Is that correct? Yeah. Essentially sent it out to all the stakeholders. That was in July, right?
The end of July, yes.
And then there was a gap of what? July is now 6 weeks later, middle of July. You had 6 weeks to process this, right? Then maybe you had to go through your structures, presumably. But then why did you send it to us yesterday and turn up here today?
Mr. Chairman, we thought that that would be the time for us to present. In the past, we've submitted the documents. We've had a hearing on the Wednesday by the Monday, so we greatly apologise for that. And if the committee needs more time to digest, and we must then come later, we will then do so. So I can just apologise.
So we agree on this then, that we will. This is our initial response. We are not familiar with this document.
Yes.
But you are here, whether you're flown in. JSC, you must have been in presumably.
Yes.
It's not fair. And Alan, can you let me know in future when people request to address us now at this stage, right? If we're entering now the latter, second half of the second stage. And at the end of the second stage, we will send you the final draft. We will allow you to have written comments. We will look at them, not have endless discussions. And then we're going to vote on the bill. The point is, Alan, I think I would like to suggest, unless the committee disagrees, in future now, anybody, if it's civil society that's different, then it's easier. But if the industry comes, I want you to first phone me and check whether they can come and make a submission. It won't be my call. I'll raise it with the committee. If the majority are okay with them coming, it's fine. But we are not having any like formal oral submissions anymore. You will get a chance at the end of the process. But nothing stops you and Treasury from talking outside. And even if you both agree, it doesn't necessarily mean we as Parliament will agree. Okay, over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Can I then just briefly deal with these principles? Yeah. I'll be very brief. And I'm actually glad that it was prefaced by the discussion that we've had about the systemically important financial institutions.
Yeah.
And the 2008 crisis, because this is the very concern that we want to raise with this committee and that we've raised with Treasury. They have disagreed with us on this point and they have made certain comments and responses, and I'll get to that in due course. But just cast my minds back, we are dealing with the exemption of external or foreign central counterparties from the requirement of being licensed. So 49A says if you're an external counterparty, you must be licensed unless you are exempted from being licensed. So it's a exceptional type of clause, and especially in relation to a central counterparty that is a systemically important market infrastructure and financial institution that interposes itself between market participants and the market. So therefore, you don't know with whom you're trading on the market, but you take comfort that the CCP interposes itself and that CCP will ensure that the performance of the obligations will take place. Now, it has always been in South Africa, the legislative framework, a fundamental and foundational cornerstone that all important financial institutions, whether they are banks, long-term insurance companies, exchanges, central security depositories, clearing houses, and all CCPs must be licensed before they are able to conduct business in South Africa. So any breach of these provisions, whether it's the Banks Act or the Long-Term Insurance Act or the Stock Exchanges Act from 1947, would be an offence and contrary to the statutory provisions and normally visited with a sanction such as imprisonment or a fine. This has always been the legal position in South Africa. since 1947 when the first stock exchange control act was promulgated, 1985 with its successor, the Financial Markets Control Act, the Securities Service Act, the Financial Markets Act, the Banks Act, and the Long-Term Insurance Act. I'm just using the Banks Act and the Long-Term Insurance Act because they are easy examples to compare with the current market infrastructure. So this well-established requirement is everybody must be licensed if you conduct business in South Africa. There have been no exceptions to this. The Banks Act do not contain such an exemption. So if you're a foreign bank, you want to conduct business as a bank in South Africa, you must be authorized, registered, and licensed by the SARB. If you are a foreign long-term insurance company and you want to conduct business in South Africa, you must be licensed as such. Foreign exchange, license. So the licensing is very, very important. The Banks Act and the Long-Term Insurance Act and all the predecessors of this act with the consequential amendments contain no exceptions at all. So this is something that's asked as a change in policy and say all these SIFIs must be licensed except an external central counterparty. They can be exempted from the licensing requirements. Now, we are saying that the submission with respect is that there's not only a requirement of process but one of substance. It means that this entity, any entity that conducts business in South Africa, competes on a level playing field, is subject to the same regulations as local entities, and that they meet the requirements. If you exempt any entity from licensing, you say you may not meet these requirements, but we exempt you from those, and you are allowed to do business. So it's an important policy shift. So if we talk about whether this is important policy, I want the committee to understand that it is something that's an exception, and they are changing a very important cornerstone of financial market legislation. We have submitted, and I say so again with respect, that this offends against the rule of law that says statutes must find equal application to all participants that conduct the same type of business. It will, in our view, introduce unfairness in the markets. It would lead to unlawful and not fair competition that permits external parties to provide the same services as local parties that must meet the South African requirements. So, in saying that this presents a shift in policy, Treasury has responded to these concerns in their response document on pages 152 to 153. So I'm going to go briefly through this, and it's difficult to explain an example with an act, something that's not a relevant example or maybe an abstract to say who is this entity that's going to come in. I'm going to use the example of the foreign bank. So you say, let's say this is a clause that says a foreign bank may be exempted from the license requirement. So let's test the policy considerations that they have, National Treasury has stated here. Firstly, they say that it's possible to defer to other jurisdictions' regulatory regimes, and this does not mean that they have an advantage. And they say that these other CCPs are already subject to very stringent regulatory and supervisory requirements. So let's just take that. Firstly, let's say Lehman Bank came to South Africa in 2007. They say we are a well-established bank. We've been in business since the late 1880s. We are subject to the very stringent United States banking regime. Why do you want to apply your requirements on us, Lehman Brothers? Because as stated here, these requirements make it difficult for us to do business in South Africa. Unfortunately, this response begs the question. The question is not whether they're regulated in their home jurisdiction. The question is, who will regulate them in South Africa? Do they meet the requirements in South Africa? Who will be responsible for their activities here? For a local regulator to defer to another regulator does not mean that the activities here will be supervised, because that local regulator has no interest in what they do here. So if this is indeed a sound policy, this policy must be applicable to an external bank as well. Secondly, they say that all CCPs are subject to extensive regulatory and supervisory standards and oversight. That is not necessarily so. Jurisdictions differ. So a CCP that is subject to the United States' requirements may well be, that may be the case, but Singapore, China, do we know? Has any study been done about what type of CCPs would we say would have sufficient requirements. The second point I make is that the other derivative transactions concluded by local banks and securities, that's already an international taste or a flavor to that, and we agree with that. But this conflates the issue of recognition of foreign CCPs with the licensing conditions that should be applicable here in South Africa. So it is indeed so that SA Absent Bank and Standard Bank concludes a transaction abroad with London Clearing House as their CCP. They will qualify for BAL relief, the capital relief for in terms of BAL. The question remains, however, if that entity conducts business in South Africa, why should that entity be exempt from the licensing requirements? Then it is stated that it will disincentivize these entities from entering the South African market. But, Mr. Chairman, with respect, that is what regulations are for, high barriers of entry. If you don't meet these requirements, you can't say it's too difficult to meet them. As you say, the global crisis will or may happen again. You need these requirements in the time of crisis. To say that we did not allow another entity to come and conduct business in South Africa with a license. We applied requirements, our own requirements. They were subject to the regulatory oversight of South Africa, but yet they failed. So to say that that it's difficult to get entry into the market, it's not the answer to the concern. And now also you are diluting an important principle. You're saying licensing is not a requirement for these entities. What's next? Why can't an external bank say, well, you've exempted the external CCP. Why not me? I can show you the same regulatory framework. So once you start to dilute this important principle, I think this committee and parliament and the policymaker must be cognizant of the fact that there are other issues that may arise. Other regulators may say that that is the case. They also then argue that it's consistent with the international jurisdiction, and with respect, that's not the test. The test is whether it's applicable and in accordance with South African law and the South African standards. Secondly, the Australian model mentioned has a very limited and exceptional circumstances fundamentally.
What you're saying, because it's quite long and it's unfair to others. I know GST is important and you're crucial, which is why we're giving you some latitude. How much more? How many more minutes do you require?
I am nearly finished, okay, Mr. Chairman. So I just want to say that we are saying that the other points I've already made in the submission, that with the exemption provision, and I see that National Treasury has noted that they're going to change Section 63M, but that deals with the manner in which an exemption is granted. That's like a lung cancer patient that you treat for the cough. The cancer itself is the licensing. Once you exempt someone from licensing, there's no, the other treatment won't, so the requirement and the exemption won't clear that. The problem is that an exemption in itself for this part of the statute in our view can never be lawful. And I then conclude with those submissions. Thanks.
Having the process matter, would it help the committee to get a response from Treasury and then we respond, or do you want to respond now? You'd rather just hear them first and then come in, Tony?
No,
you happy with that?
I'm saying that.
Oh, all right, so you want to speak now, okay.
No, Chair, I strongly hold the view that trade liberalization should not create barriers to entry in any market. That's my personal view. When you're dealing with trade liberalization, you should be able to incentivize investment. Okay? That's my personal opinion. It can be changed in the committee at any given point. And I'm saying this because unless if we call the Competition Commission to come here and test the view that if external counterparties are not licensed in South Africa is unfair, then we'll have to bring the competition, because we cannot be protectionist in approach when it suits us, and then at the same time we're looking for investment and we don't incentivize investment, right? And I'm talking from a trade point of view because I have been there before. Now, if you want to have protectionist laws, they're going to limit investment. I don't know the view you hold, Mr. Treasurer, but that's my personal view. And we have to look at this thing very, very carefully. And And you see, up until we get a scenario presented to us, either by JSC or any other organization that has an example of any foreign CV that has invested in any country and who has been exempted from license and has not obliged to fair competition policies, then we can consider it. But for now, we don't have. Right? We're moving from a presumptive view that it will create unfairness. I believe that the gist of the matter here, it's more about JSC wanting to be exempted from licensing as a CV. Is that more will cover up?
No, not at all.
No, that's okay. No, okay, Chair. We want them to cough it out so that we understand the gist. So it's fine. It's a good engagement. I will want to extend it further. Because, you see, we have looked at the clearing houses in the UK in particular. We have not seen anything different from what we want to do. We went there, Chair, you forgot. We asked this specific question. We went to the clearing house. Roy will remember. So I believe the gist is the recognition of the CC. And we want protection from competition, from foreign competition. And that's not trade liberalization. That's something else. In South Africa, we deal with trade liberalization. The ZTL should have spoken more on this one. It's a policy matter that you have adopted. So basically, if we want to change policies, we don't change it here through this legislation. We change it somewhere else.
Mr. Topham, Sifiso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My main issue or question in regards to their point four on license cancellation. So the issue is obviously not to do with the JSC itself, but those entities which the JSC regulates that could therefore be in a situation where it's considered to be a systemic event, and instructions given that clearing authority, whatever, must stay in business, but you guys feel that they shouldn't be in business. So you'd be in a situation where your act would require you to close them down, and say the Reserve Bank, for lack of the prudential authority, has said, no ways, the economy of the country is balancing on a thin edge, and you can't close them down. So that's really the question. So who will be able to win? Who's going to be the big boss in those circumstances? So that's really, I think, the question, that you think that in such a situation you've been in a bad position. So does our act actually say that it supersedes your act, or is that what you're wanting to say, that your act supersedes this act in those circumstances? But I think that obviously the prudential authority must have a higher authority in this case. Does it say that? If not, it needs to say that's what you say indirectly, or are you saying that no, we shouldn't allow that to take place? As regards the first one, I think I understand now. Initially, I didn't understand it. Or you saying there, because there's no reference to our act at all, effective, it's all the FMA Act, and I'm looking for the sections that I've voted out, and you're just saying that this act allows the probably the prudential authority to effectively give a license to a clearinghouse in Switzerland to trade there without a license. Okay, which is probably very unlikely, but you're saying that it shouldn't be allowed to take place. And okay, so we'll get the input from Treasury on why they think it should be.
Thanks, Chair. Can I understand that? I might have missed it. What is the risk that you are trying to mitigate by wanting them to be licensed here also? That's one. And then perhaps to National Treasury. If I were to go back to gambling, which is my previous life, you would have a casino or a company which is licensed in Nevada, which is a highly regulated and environment. But when we started licensing here in South Africa, we also licensed them again. All what it does, it makes it easier for you to license here in South Africa, because you are starting from you are saying you know already that they are being licensed in a well-regulated jurisdiction. So I'm asking to from national treasury to, if we were to talk about that, why do you think once they are licensed in on jurisdiction A, they shouldn't be licensed here? Thanks, Chair.
Anybody else? Mr. Topper?
Two finger. Obviously, Sadiso was a share trader who was in gambling before.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just firstly, from the first honourable member, is we agree and we have no issue with being classified as a SIFI, and we will assume all those responsibilities. We will also, we are a licensed clearinghouse and central counterparty, and we will remain one. We will also convert our and restructure our business to become an independent clearinghouse as and CCP, as stated in the new Act. Our issue is that we believe, as a matter of policy and principle, the type of legislation that the Financial Markets Act and any type of SIFI legislation granting an exemption to a specific party can never be lawful and will lead to disastrous economic and risk consequences. So that is the problem. We are saying if we have to be licensed, if banks have to be licensed and everyone else, then everyone else that conduct business in South Africa must be subject to those same requirements. And it's not lawful to exempt one specific entity from those requirements. So we are not saying that we don't want to be licensed. We are saying we want to compete, and you can never stop competition, but we want to compete on a level playing field. Secondly,
just to follow up on that one, I want to say, can we guess which law have we that will be contravened when we do it, so that we can look at that piece of legislation?
In Section 49A, one, the last sentence, it says an external counterparty must be licensed under this section to exercise functions as prescribed unless it is exempt from the requirement to be licensed.
No, you said it will not be lawful to exempt, so I wanted to know which legislation will we be contravening.
It will be, might be contrary to the Constitution and the rule of law.
Which
is all statutes.
Which section of the Constitution?
I forget Section 33, but I must I'll revert to you. It's the rule of law that is actually the whole foundation of the Constitution that says that a statute must find equal application to all persons regulated by it. But Advocate Jenkins, I think, would be better placed to answer that. I'm not sure about the precise section.
Mr. Chair, I want to follow up on that because I'm also, where is that exemption granted in this FSR bill? It's not 49A.
No, it's to the consequential amendments to the Financial Markets Act.
Okay.
And that would be a consequential amendment to Section 49 of the Financial Markets Act by the inclusion of Section 49 capital A1.
Where's this document, the consequential?
Thank you.
Just clarify, this is all in the schedules.
The schedules, yes.
We decided to have the schedules with this thing is a bit too thick, so we split it into two to facilitate processing. Go ahead, please. Do you have anything else you want to say?
Kareem, Chairman, the second question about who's the big boss? There is the higher authority. We agree that the prudential or the conduct authority should always have the final say. We're not saying that we should be the final say. The issue actually arises as follows. This as a practical example. We have a clearing member who's also a large bank. Thanks. So we have clearing members also a large bank. The bank defaults in our market. It's very important to get that bank to close the bank's positions down and to transfer the assets held on behalf of clients to another bank or another clearing member that's not in default. We must be able to take immediate action. If you read the provision of Section 31(1) read with the definition of a license, it may be argued that because we are suspending that clearing member from trading, we are varying that clearing member's license or the authorization, and to do that, we must get the approval of the SARB. So in that instance, time is of the essence. SARB may say, we don't want this message to go out to the market, there will be a run on the bank, we want you to keep this bank in the market and not suspend it. But that in turn will lead to more losses on the market, to more clients losing money because you have this insolvent entity. So it's a very, to get occurrence, we will consult with the SARB, we will inform the SARB, but in a crisis situation, in a matter of default in the derivatives market, what is of critical importance is to close that member down and get that member out of the market forthwith. The problem we have with that is we're not saying that we will suspend the license of the bank or we will sequestrate the bank. We are just saying, as the market regulator, we need to get that entity out of the market. The final say about the liquidation of the bank and so forth must remain with the SARB. But to solve the crisis in the market, we believe it's appropriate for the exchange or whichever CCP is to deal with that matter. If I answer that concern.
Can we park? I know we don't have time. I don't know what to say anymore. What? Can we park this? I want us to apply our minds on this.
Since I like reminding people about the rules and conventions and norms, there's no rule that says a chairperson has to fully understand every clause in every sum. If there are technical experts who are better than the chair, and there are many in this committee, this is not local government where you don't need any technical skills. Pinky always, by the way, Kule, every time I Pinky says, don't forget me, it's all right. Pinky and I declare that we find this thing too complex. But Pinky and I declare we do not believe we should be pushed around by technical experts from government or industry or civil society. And we will not vote on a bill unless we have enough technical experts in our committee who understand it. So we will look at our technical experts, apart from the research team, and then come to. I really want to tread cautiously on this. But now that they have flown in from Joburg, and they're costing wherever they are the bill, and we're not going to have them coming here endlessly, I think we should just raise the issue of clarity and initial comments. It's tentative, pending further consultation and discussion, and having a treasury. Do you want to say something, Mr. Topham?
Yeah, it's actually exactly that. I think my opinion, I'll ask the judge, there's probably 10 people in South Africa that probably understand what they're talking about, if that. If I don't even know, there might be a hand for more or whatever. That's my guess on this. But the unintended consequences of the stock exchange has agreements with other stock exchanges around the world, which gives recognition to each other for dual listings, etc. So we cannot be the only country in the world that's on this harmonization countries model that hasn't had similar things. So maybe the JC should give a... That is maybe
to remind people of the convention. A committee has a chair and a whip, not a chief whip. There's only one chief whip that I know of, at least of the. Now, there's also the official heckler. Andy Tobias. Okay, comrade, official heckler. I want to say the rules say you are the main heckler, but the chair has to steer by, you know, jibes, by banter, by cutting remarks, and by sometimes really being helpful.
Right. So I think they need to give a more detailed submission and to what the effects of this will be, because you wouldn't want to adopt this and therefore take away their powers to do what they've got to do and then have the JCD recognize or something like that. So it's not in their document yet, but this is what I'm thinking. The consequences of this will be if they don't have the power to exercise their mandate as a whatever the correct term is, as a stock exchange, then that could have other ramifications. But for me, I think it's a simple thing that even if the things are a CC, they would still have the power to suspend and then close out or something. But those are technical things that we're never going to understand, yeah. And I think that they need to, maybe, it's been brought to our attention, so we know that, but it's now square out on female black.
Much better. If somebody like you is saying that,
yeah.
I mean, really, Pinky, we're not so impotent and so useless as we think we are. Fine.
Shall I ask a simple question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on the last response, yes, indeed, and we also stated that in the submission, we have discussed the issue of the clearing member issue and the closing out with the National Treasury, and unfortunately, this is something that has to be dealt with the government of the SARB directly, and we will engage with the government. We just thought it's best to highlight this problem, and we are in the process of discussing that with the governor of the SARB to have to get some form of agreement or concurrence about the manner in which we will deal with those crisis situations. Just the honourable member's last question about the gambling example, I think, is a very good example to be used. And if that is indeed the case, then I agree with that. So let's say you have a casino, the Mandalay Bay, where they have the good boxing, the Mandalay Bay wants to operate in South Africa, they must still be licensed as in South Africa. Yes, the South African regulator takes comfort in many of the aspects that they already comply with in America. They will look at their license application and they say, well, we can see that you comply, and they will grant the license. It makes the licensing regime simpler and, I think, easier for the foreign counterpart. Similarly, if a central counterpart wants to be licensed in South Africa, we will use the fact that they are recognized abroad and that they comply with those requirements to take comfort in the fact that they comply with our licensing requirements. But we won't exempt them, just as we won't exempt the Nevada casino from licensing. It will be easier for them, it may be easier for them to be licensed, but they must be licensed. They will not be exempted from that requirement. I think those are all the questions, Mr. Chair.
Tandy and then Tracy will come in.
Yeah, you see the reason why I said you must pass this matter. Because, you know, we can have different opinions, and we want to formulate an opinion that will assist everybody. So we're also going to even relook at when there's an institution that is defaulting, whether you're going to freeze their assets or it's liquidating, we'll apply our minds even on that. So let's leave it at that, and as we engage national, because we have noted those issues that has been raised, the three has been cleared and there's these two. So we'll pay attention to that. So I might have used the word that Brendan must keep quiet, but all I was trying to say is that let's shape it up together and find a way. Because we're going to first get more information. Like I made indications, we need the view of the Competition Commission. You know?
I haven't talked about that.
Yeah, it gets involved in a way. And you see, the issue of incentives is another issue that comes in differently, in a way. Then we apply our mind broadly, then it will then respond to JSC, and then they can respond to that before.
Good, yeah. Okay, to you and your team.
Yeah, Chair. I think, you know, I want to say what I said to the JSC the last time. We're not here to defend their monopoly, and we're not here to do their bidding. Okay. The problem here, and that's why I only deal with their boss, when they come, firstly, the delegations are different. Yes, but it's happened even since. We'll tell you. The person who speaks wasn't at the last meeting. New persons get employed. I'm saying there's all these new things, okay? We're not here to defend their monopoly, firstly. Secondly, some of the provisions are not new that they're objecting to. They've been the same. New person, new objections. Okay? It's very hard to deal with people when they're not consistent. And two, when there's disagreement, they can't accept that we're not going to agree with them. It is surprising for them to start questioning equivalence between different regulators overseas. That's standard practice. I'm shocked that they would raise it. The point is, so if you take the provision on the SARB coming in, that's an all clause. Why a new objection now? On the issue of the SIFI and exemptions, they demonstrate ignorance about current laws like the Banks Act, where there are exemption provisions.
And yes, we, even when we give exemptions, we do, yes. So I don't know what the issues are. And I think that they're just slowing down our process and whatever. We are open to talking to them. But the point is they must accept. We differ on certain things, and on some things, we're not there to agree to everything they want. So I have a problem with their process and their approach, but we'll engage with them.
Right. You're not before 1994, but we get the...
No, sir, I raised this thing earlier on that Mom was raising. You see, I said, when we're encouraging trade, we're not going to introduce protectionist laws for our local institutions that's going to create barrier to entry. That's a fundamental question, and it's a policy issue that the ANC-led government has taken. And it's being questioned. It's not an administrative issue that is being questioned here. It's a policy position. And I said, this cannot be discussed here. It can't. It's the policy of the ANC that we cannot create barrier to entry. Now, we decided that that's how our trade is going to be featured. And if we want to engage that decision, there's a different platform to do that, right? It cannot be covered by this piece of legislation. And we should not be confused. I said, if there is a suggestion that the manner in which we structure our legislation is creating unfair competition, it needs to be tested. We need to be given a scenario so that we can consider that scenario. In this context, it has never been presented, and I'm talking from the beginning of our discussion last year on this legislation. Comrade. Please. No, you see, this is not heckling, it's something else. This is not heckling, it's something else.
It's not heckling now, Sophie.
Because, you see, No. You see, it's a different issue altogether. Comrade Siso will take him on board how we shape this thing to until this extent. And it's got nothing to do with the national treasures. And we're not going to, at one point when people are business people, we look at their business interests at the expense of law making process. That we will not do. We can't. Including yourself, Chair. When you become a business person and you're having certain interests, we're not going to legislate to cover you. We've got trust biasness in terms of policy making in the African National Congress. That's not going to be changed by this legislation. So we'll come to that point. And we can do that on our own somewhere else. Here, I want a scenario. We want to hear everybody. We want to give the JSC a benefit of doubt. It must present a scenario. They said Section 33 of the Constitution is not there. I just said it. It's not there. There's no contravention of the law. It's not there. And I don't want to say against. There's this in the house. I call it the L word. I can't say the L word here because I don't allow the kids to say the L word. They normally say it in the chamber, and the speaker doesn't like it. I can't say against this. It's doing that because it's not in the constitution. Now, if you contravene any law, we want a specific section so that we can correct national treasury if they're contravening the law, because we cannot adopt unconstitutional legislation. So we need examples. One, which section of the Constitution has been contravened, or any other legislation that has been adopted either by Finance Committee or any other committee of Parliament, so that we can consider that, because we want to be fair to everybody. But here, we are dealing with normative statements. There's no scenarios. There's no facts on the table. We have looked at the role of clearinghouses somewhere else. We have not found the things that are being raised here. So I will consider it. If there's a scenario put for us, it has been tested somewhere, and then we can consider it. That we verify. We're not going to allow national treasury to walk over anybody, but we also need to be given something that we can say, yes, indeed, we agree with you on this basis.
Chair, in fact, I wanted to agree with Comrade Chandenza herself. I thought you said, let's pack this thing. I think that's all that I'm saying. Just minute, let's pack it to a point to reconsider it.
Now, you see, when I say to people, let's move on, people say I'm suppressing them, right? So, you know, I have to go by subjective. There's no other way you can do it.
So, but now we can't cut Mr. Topham off, so I'm going to allow you to speak for a minute, no more. What's your point?
Just, I think when we do the consequential amendments at 49, I would like to hear why we would want to, for instance, grant. I can't see us doing it. What's the thought process there? Because that is a good point. And just in justification of JC, you are my best friends at the moment. It is complicated legislation, so I'm sure every day people are working through it, they might come up with something new. So I think it's okay they bring up new stuff from time to time, rather now than once the bill is passed and we're going to go through a major process.
Can I just say that actually I think we agree with the timely proposal, so this becomes a theme, right? Sikini, nothing stops you from writing to us. I don't think we're going to call you unless we have to, and that will be at the very end. You can comment on the bill. But what I want to say in fairness to Treasury, I don't think it's correct for any organization, whether it's civil society or industry, to come with different individuals each time and say different things. That's not right. And I agree with Treasury, actually. When you spoke now, it struck me that at least two-thirds of the things you've said before. So the issues have come up, members. But you must remember, people from civil society, or industry for that matter, we sat with this bill, and unlike other bills, we're not sitting every day to finish it. We've been trying to do that. It would help Momo if you can sort the problems out. Eskom crisis, SAA crisis, FSB crisis. I mean, everything is a crisis for them. For us, these are challenges, and it's but as we as the ANC, we are concerned, right, about what's going on. So then we don't have the time. So what we're saying is, in short, we're agreeing this is a theme, point one. Point two, we thank the JSC for coming in. Let's sort your act out, right? Don't come with different people saying different things. Three, easy if people can bear to talk to each other, that will help us. But we must also make it clear, neither you as industry or JSC or however you define yourself, nor them as government have the final say. It is Parliament. And if we take a decision, we're not just going to do it as Handy says at whim. Even though we don't understand the technique, and why should we? We're politicians. Where in the world? You think the UK chair of the Finance Committee or the US Congress Finance Committee, she understands the complexities? Unless you or she has come from the stock exchange, of course, and spent 30 years there. So we don't apologize for that. We have a wonderful Antonia Manumela. She's not an expert in this area. And we've got Tumisani Yanchis when he can be here. So we will look at our research. If need be, colleagues, we might have to ask Speaker to sanction us getting some independent expertise from outside. But we are very clear. Ultimately, no bill is done in the vested narrow interests of any sector, be it workers or capital. Right? I raise that because people see me in a particular way, which is understandable but not appropriate because, you know, I'm guided by majority view. So, in short, thank you very much. We will consider any further proposal and make on the basis of what's been said here. Not too long and as simple as possible. And if necessary, we will have you back only in the last stage, if necessary, if we haven't come to clarity on various issues. But you're certainly like anybody else, because I do the legal resources allowed to comment when we finish the bill and before we vote on it in the formal stage. Thank you very much. You can stay if you like. Can we now move on? Is there anything else people want to say? No? Nope. Right. Let's move on to looking at clause 58. We're going to pass for now. 59, governance. Is there any issue from the basic? Sorry, yes, somebody else? Yes, Kathy?
58.2 we were passing, but I just wanted to confirm whether we could go through the subsection 3, 4, 5. Or did we contradict the question?
No, let's go through that because you're right. Because we have now settled, unless something new emerges, the relationship between the NCR and the rest of the Twin Peaks dispensation. So the second, the number 3, the subclause 3 is fine from what I can see. Subclause 4, Antonio, you'll remind me if I leave major issues out, right? I don't see any problem. 5, anybody sees any problem? 6, okay. Then let's look at 59. Yeah.
Sorry, just to, on clause 58, just to highlight, there were two comments from the BASA and CISA those issues have been dealt with in relation to the credit issue we've discussed.
Yeah, fine. 59, 60. Okay, look at 60 sub 1. 60 sub 2. If you look at the matrix, we're now in 71 is the next comment, right? There are individual submissions you're responsible for that, right? Basa and Asisa are here, I take it they will intervene and say, look, we've got our separate comments, we've agreed on that already, right? So it's up to you. So 60 sub 2 is fine. 60 sub 3. Why did you remove that?
It's dealt with in clause 66, which deals with me.
At the bottom, yeah, okay, right. So 3A, any point? 3B? 3B2, can I ask a question on that? It says delegating powers of the financial to the prudential authority in terms of section 7. Now, we've covered this before, but can I, I'm sorry, man, if you just put it in a nutshell, what sort of authority you delegate?
So it would work different. It would work differently, I expect, depending on whether it was from the prudential authority, the conduct authority, the conduct authority to the prudential authority. In this instance, there are areas of overlapping interest, so it could be, for example, a governance requirements that are set by both, which could be through a joint standard, but it could also be through a delegation. And I'm not sure if the FSB has anything to add on this point.
Concrete example for a politician, right? Give me in the real world what would happen. Not the process, what sort of delegation?
So from the...
A practical example.
The prudential authority to the conduct authority, it could be prudential oversight on asset managers, for example, a hedge fund, where the prudential authority, there might be prudential risk from that fund. The prudential authority may want to set standards that deal with the prudential risk brought by that fund or stability risk. But rather than being the frontline supervisor, because the conduct authority has primary interest in the asset management world, it might make sense for them to be doing this, the frontline supervision. It was more just ordering, you've removed it, it's moved, it's further down, yes. The licenses for the financial institutions, and remember what this section is about, is saying of all the powers that vest within the conduct authority, and the delegation clauses are later, most of those powers and duties can be delegated down. What we're saying is that the executive committee must perform these particular functions, so in other words, those are issuing and relating to the licenses, because it's such an important decision.
Give examples of it.
FSP license, CIS license, any of the financial...
Oh, CIS. Oh, the collective investment schemes license.
Any of the financial institutions would be licensed.
All right. And the fees below that, making determination of fees in terms of financial sector law?
Be the same. So we're saying that the committee itself needs to be responsible for the fees as may be determined in terms of the...
No, the question is what sort of fees? Give us like a concrete... What fees are you talking about?
I'm going to hand over to the FSB.
No. You know what? People felt it was a temporary mental outburst, right? It's much more than that. You know who I'm talking about in Cocktail, right? That wonderful guy. Your equivalent, right? They do the department. I'm not saying you consciously do it.
and I'm unapologetic about this. I just think somebody might be interested to know. In several departments, people, including somebody seated right here, I don't think they consciously do it. All of us are influenced by our unconscious biases. It's not plain class interest, Andy. I think it's also unconscious by ideological and other. And we have found, I can speak for myself, I suspect other committee chairs, the ones that I know quite well. I can't speak for Tandy because he's never said anything. We have found department officials not giving us a full enough explanation. What I read in the media is actually committees complain that officials come and lie. No, it's, they actually lie. It's said in the media. Google it. Committee officials have been accused many times over the last years. I'm not saying about you. So it wasn't just a temper. I have experienced it. I'll tell you something worse. And I think Momon was talking about, when we change a bill, Sunday, in those days I was mad enough to think I must do the job. So I used to go and sit with the department till 4 in the morning and look at every clause. I can tell you on two bills, the number of things that we agreed to change. In those days we had no Antonia and we had no Advocate Jenkins. I went across there to 120 Plains Street, not my job, and sat there. On two bills, Makosi must ask me after this meeting. What they do is, and then they told us, the officials told us. They said, yes, we agree, but you see, we are answerable to so-and-so. So I found the person at about 1 o'clock in the morning. He knows that. That's a comrade of ours. Eh? He's got a nice, strong UDF history. So I've been through this. So it wasn't a temperamental outburst. And let me tell you, it's not substantially different from what happens in Parliament in the world all over to different degrees. You go to the UK Parliament, you will find similar things are happening. Yeah. So what I'm saying is, yeah, people think this is a silly temperamental outburst. No. We have been steered in directions, and the worst part is changes made to two bills. One time the officials, they said, Eunice, we agree with you, we did this, but we asked. Because they didn't think that somebody would go there in a bill that ran into, I think now it'll leak who I'm talking about and so on, but let's say a very substantial bill. And when I confronted the guy, he admitted that he had done that. And I took it inside because I said, it's wrong, dishonest. You can fight your case, and if you lose, that one bill was completely rewritten, as you might know. Nowadays, we don't rewrite bills. Eh? This is very easy. There have been three bills at least. We'll take Johnny's TRC bill, not Johnny's. They rewrote it completely. That's real effective oversight, you know. And I wish Parliament would come back to that. And I wish that we would do what we're supposed to do. Except that now, with your bill, it's much harder. Because it's so deliberate, this exchange now. Right? I know you got annoyed. And actually, I'm much more empathetic to you than you think I am, but you know, the fact is that personally, I don't really understand the issues more. Like on the tax bills, you know, and it's difficult. I've never been a chair of a committee where I feel so, let's say, inadequate actually. You know, and you say, well, it's all over the world, these tax things, you yourself, as good as you are in this area. But coming back to this, we did make up, and I don't think we should draw attention to that. I don't think you meant to, so on, but I'm not talking about you, Kathy. This has happened before. And really, I've been through it personally. And not only on those two occasions. As recently as a public enterprise in Krakow, with the same problem. But leave that aside, we moved on. Basically, you want to say something more? But Tandy, you want to say something? Let's have Tandy quickly.
Chair, 3, 8. Making determinations of fees in terms of financial aspects. Remember last week we had an intense debate on the structure of fees. So I don't know whether this will still cover Makosi's point and then we defer or what do we do? Mm-hmm. So this is affected also.
Kathy, the question isn't what the meaning of the clause is. It's a concrete one, what sort of fees. You come back to our theme about new entrants and so on, right? I mean, we'll go to the top and say, but we're just worried about what this all means.
come back to last week. Obviously, here, putting the clause here is saying only the people right at the top of this authority will make this decision.
Yeah. Okay. So in that sense, we have to agree with it. Right. The question becomes later, what do you actually mean by fee?
Now,
the fact that you can delegate is okay. No, we agree.
Now we're doing this in phases. At the moment, there's all kinds of fees in terms of each of the acts, and let the FSB come in, the current model. Okay. So that's how it gets determined. There is a short chapter at the end on fees, but I think just hearing the discussion last week, and I think we have to read this with the PFMA as well, because the body's budget and strat plan, etc., will apply. So it's not like, obviously, the Prudential Authority, which is out of the PFMA. But I think that, for me, in these things, you're going to have a proper process when you determine fees. You're going to put it out, get comment, etc. And I think we might need to just step that up in the law when we come to it at the end. So what the specific fees are, we can tell you what's there currently. But our approach, of course, on this is that we don't want to, there will be fees and there will also be levies. Okay, maybe you heard a bit of this yesterday, the tire levy. Okay, what's the tax or levy and what's the fee? Okay, there's big issues around that. Second thing is, but just generally, a tax is an unrequited sort of transfer of funds, okay, that we don't have to deliver anything. It gets appropriated or given to a particular body to spend in terms of other laws. Fees can be more specific, but let them come in, because you know, a company may apply for a merger or do some restructuring, and there would be a fee charge. But Jonathan, do you want to come in? Like, say, what are the fees on the insurance side?
Yeah, so that's thanks. It's nice to be here. So that would cover generally. It's fees for various applications that regulated entities have to make. So, for instance, when they apply for a new license, there's a fee that's paid for the essentially the time and energy that's spent by the regulator in processing those types of applications. Things like change in shareholding, etc. So the idea, in a sense, is that you have your general levies, which cover your core expenses of the regulator. But if there's a particular regulated entity that's, let's say, being more active than others and making lots of changes to its organizational structure, or varying its license conditions and so on, the idea is it's not particularly fair to cross-subsidize the decisions or of that entity through general levies. And the idea is that they should pay a fee towards the time and energy spent by the regulator on dealing with their specific issue. So it's an exercise is done to essentially calculate the time spent on doing a particular activity, and then multiplying that time spent by the cost of the staff involved in doing that, and that's how we calculate the fee.
Explanation, Sally?
No, I understand the difference between a levy and a fee. What I'm raising is that the issue that Makosi raised and Brendan last week, we said we'll come back to that. So I was just saying this clause also is affected by that decision, because it's more about the structure of the fees that is being questioned, not whether there should be a provision to pay fees or not. I don't think that is an issue. So.
It's the right to delegate. So the clause is fine, but the actual fees thing comes up later, and it's one of our 12 themes. We communicated to them quite clearly that we want to look carefully at the fees and levy structure, right? We do not want
the fees and levies to penalize new emergent players. That is like a theme of ours. And we will not budge on that. And that we will look at when we come there. So I don't think there's any disagreement here. Okay? So can we go on to the next clause? The sub 9 at the top is fine. Commissioner and Deputy Commissioners. Now, here again, this performance measures thing I really like, okay? In 7, where everywhere you've got performance measures. On 61.1, is 61 as a whole, is there any comment? Members, anything? I don't have anything personally. Fine. So 62. Okay, 62.1, is there any comment on that one? Can I raise B, right? It is subject to section 60 sub 4. Is that a correct subsection? I couldn't work it. 60 sub 4. Is that a correct cross reference?
Sorry. Actually, I think the reference in the latest version is it would be 60 subsection 3. Yeah.
Will change at the end, right? Depending on the amendments we make. And that's really Advocate Jenkins more than your responsibility, Antonio, but you can just give him notes, right? And then the 62 sub 2. Yeah?
Sign off complete on 61. So
yeah. Nobody said anything. I don't have anything personally. 62 sub 2, what's the issue there?
It was just a correction because it was talking about a sign. So remember the delegation versus a sign meaning. So it's using better language to say that what the roles of the deputy commissioner is as determined rather than they're a sign, which means they have...
Yeah, okay, fine. I'm sure members, you're fine with that. Good. Shall we go to 63? You removed the office. Why is that?
And make it easier reading because it continues, what starts off with A holds office for.
Ah, yes.
And then
okay, that makes sense. Then inform the person whether or not there's no need for the need or not. You don't normally use the or not. Anyway, good. So 63 as amended is fine, right? 64? No, I'm sure there's no issues here. It's a standard clause. Yeah, it's a standard clause. But 65? It's a standard clause for the most part. Yeah, the only thing I ask... Object? Yeah, you just cleaned up the language, right? There's no need for those words, right? But now, what about sub 8? You say... Yeah, I think we asked this question before, right?
It's a transparency issue.
That's a transparency issue. Okay, fine. 66? Yeah.
I was thinking there was a similar point you raised about medical schemes. I'm talking to 66 sub...
66. Which sub clause?
5.
65.
It speaks of... Remember last week you asked the question, why medical schemes?
Yeah, they explained.
I thought maybe we should also insert a word that says, and also any other...
Where would that be, Daniel? A bit lost. What sub clause?
Five.
What is it?
I can't see the
bottom.
The
bottom
is so faint.
I think she's referring to 66.5. Yeah. 66. Oh, sorry. Oh, yes. Accounts for medical schemes, right? So her proposal is to add any other relevant schemes or any other relevant...
How they put it? Just to cover any other that is not necessarily mentioned.
Okay, fine. What's your response?
It does provide for that, but we can improve the wording if it's not clear, because it does refer to, so it says the commissioner or deputy commissioner chairing a meeting may invite or allow any other person,
including
a representative of...
any other person at the beginning.
The reason why we've spelled those out...
Yeah. That's a good point, yeah. Yeah. Advocate is treasury right. Charlie, I agree with you. I just don't know what's legal here. Yeah, but fine. No, let's finish it. Advocate is Tanya Kamet.
It's actually in the Interpretation Act. So it's spelled out in the that person includes a juristic person.
No, but it's a useful comment. If I may say so. Now, number seven. No. Then somebody might say, I'm telling you useful today because maybe I'm agreeing with you. I told you, Tandy is the star of the committee. There's a certain resident technical expert who's writing another book, I suspect. But she's here and she's not here. Fully, are you noticing? Tandy's here first. She exposed herself, right? Okay, I never mentioned the name. So, Stephen, the commissioner must ensure. I don't know why I underlined this thing. Now, because it's last week, I'm too old when I was with them the night before. Stephen. Or the determined story by the commissioner. We've covered this, right? It's similar to a previous story about that. 67. Any comments, colleagues? Yeah, the each is a grammatical thing. 67 is covered. 68.1. What have you done here, team?
Again, it's an improvement to the reading because otherwise it's specified must establish one subcommittee to do these different things. Rather, you would need to have a subcommittee to review and monitor.
Yeah. Okay, it's making a lot of sense to me. Anybody got any takers here? No, so we agree. Just let me ask you, the Director General is obviously the Director General of National Treasury, right? Yeah, okay, fine. I'm not sure that I'm clear about this, right? But 3B, you say the majority of the members of the subcommittee, right? And then in 3D, you say a subcommittee established in terms of section may include persons who are neither members of the executive committee. So can you see whether 3B and D are consistent with each other, Jimmy? Kathy?
Thank you, Chair. B is just requiring that these subcommittees can't be made up of a majority of staff members of the conduct authority. But D is allowing additionally other people to be on a subcommittee who would not be either members of the executive committee or staff members, so completely external, independent people. Yes, I believe they can be implemented consistently.
Maybe just to add. If you look at the first one, 3B refers to committees established in terms of subsection one, which are the committees that sort of do some oversight of the institution, where D refers to committees established in terms of two. So the first one refers to the oversight committees, and then it's important to make sure that it's not overshadowed or the majority is not members of the.
I see you here. When the JSC was here, you didn't comment, and I forgot you were here. It wasn't good if you did. No, while you were here. Sorry? Yeah, can I ask you something? No, look, may I just have, may the committee just indulge? Actually, it's useful. What was your take on what the JSC said? Please, I think it's very helpful to her. I forgot you were here. Why did you not put your hand up? We allow Afisa and all of these people to speak. Why can't you speak?
Chair, I wanted the Treasury to veto the constitution.
Knowledge, maybe intercourse, right? Mm-hmm. And you can share that outside the meeting. But is there anything you would like? We want advice from experts. So what was your take?
Yes. So, Chair, on the specific issue that relates to the staff concurrence on varying, revoking, and changing licenses of CFEs, I think it's a classic case of cutting your nose to spite your face. Regulatory decisions are relevant for financial stability and financial instability. So if they are made
someone else like the staff who has a mandate for financial stability, being able to come in and say, although you are right in terms of your narrow interpretation of your need to pursue your objective, but if you pursue that objective at the expense of financial stability, the next day you will not have any mandate to pursue. So that's why we have asked that we have that concurrence provision. It's there to protect the stability and not to sacrifice financial stability at the altar of technical correctness. So we're quite clear the fact that that is our position. But they did indicate that they want to actually talk to my principals about this, which is their right to do so as a JSC. But that is the sub position on that matter.
So what the norms are and so on, Momo. But it might be appropriate if you meet them, even if it's an informal way, and if Monati thinks it's appropriate, he also be there. But we believe you, because the JSC, whatever we think, is very powerful, right? And we can't like just be dismissive, no matter the problems, right? And so maybe if Munati is there, you see, they seem to be very cheesed off with Treasury, right? If you don't listen, then it's useful to have somebody like Munati there, because he's a regulator and he comes across. I mean, your persona is of a very calm, temperate person, right? Unlike a certain other person. It might help. Well, no, but you, I know, AFP, yeah. No, no. No, you know why it's important, Sandy? These things are covered by PMGs, and those guys can't get away either. So, you know, I mean, the Treasury must have its say. It's not fair, because if you keep them quiet, then it's not, every voice has not been heard. So I think, Unasi, I forgot you were here. I wish you had come in. Remember, you can speak on anything, right? Okay. From Munati? Yeah, it's a pity you didn't insert it there. Where's Linda and so on? I see the media is also here. They cover things in a skewed way, right? You know what they will do, Business Day in particular? They will make the whole story about what the JSC said and its unhappiness. Meanwhile, everybody else in that industry, you know, is like saying, okay, we didn't get everything we want. Like Basra and Asisa are getting more gracious. A bit fierce in their own diplomatic way. But I think they'll have to accept it, like on the FICA board. Okay, let's go on. 69. Now here we've covered, this is really similar to a previous clause. I couldn't see any difference. So can we just adopt this? Thank you. On regulatory strategies again. Number 70 is clearing up the language, right? 71. Can you explain too clearer than it says? It talks about regulatory and supervisory strategies, right? And then it talks about guiding principles.
So, broadly speaking, the strategy is intended to do two things. Firstly, describe how it's going to exercise its mandate in practice, and be specific about identifying what those priorities are from a sector perspective. So, for example, going forward, it might be the retail distribution review, tidying up on the distribution framework, learning how to regulate banks because it's new for the organization. I think it will also be about not just the actual areas that it's, or the project that it's focusing on, but a description on how it's going to exercise its responsibilities. And that's intended for good governance, again, to both guide or compel the organization to be coming up with a framework for itself, but at the same time helping the regulated sector understand what those priorities are, how those processes will be done, and that should help the efficiency of the system. But again, Jonathan, I wonder if you want to come in on this.
Fine. Sub 4, that's not covered with the earlier discussion, right, on credit regulator and so on. You want to see something, Mr. Topham?
Just the fact particularly around this strategy in general. I think the people that are going to be affected the most are the banks, because the existing financial service providers are covered by some form of regulation already. Will the banks are now fall subject to this regulation of their conduct. Will they automatically be bound by, for instance, to know your customer or treat your customer fairly principle of the FSB? Does that on day one kick in for them? Or will there be a new regulation effectively passed to say that that principle or whatever, that directive, there we go, maybe that's the right way, from day one in the strategy will kick in for the banks, etc. So that previously weren't subject to this regulatory oversight of their conduct. The timing of this, well, that comes in here. I mean, yeah, annually you can revise it. I know you might deal with it later.
So the jurisdiction kicks in from day one, but there isn't an existing sectoral law that stipulates, there's no binding requirement you must treat your customer fairly. Those will be the standards which are developed in terms of what that means to apply not only to banks but also cross-sectorally as well. And FSB, do you want to add?
Yeah, I think it's useful to add, however, that treating customers fairly goes beyond a mere sort of regulatory compliance requirement. And actually, we've been talking to banks for the last 2 years about treating customers fairly and the conduct and culture change that's required so that they're ready for when the legislative provisions kick in. So they've actually had about 2 years to prepare for it. And in discussions with Barca last week, they acknowledged that they've known it's been coming for a long time, and they have been preparing for it. But yeah, and Yvette's nodding her head as well. So,
but sure, no, they know. But just remember what I said at the previous meeting. Remember, there's no longer white monopoly capital. Because if you look at the identity of the JSC, it's coloured monopoly capital now, eh? Those are the JSC, the stats of the JSC, but you know, it's not the JSC. But yeah, just helping the EFF, they call us white monopoly capital, remember, so. But so the point is, they know it's coming, but on day one it's not there. So the all the existing FIS regulated blah 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 entities, they've got it already, it rolls over. Then on day one, this committee's going to have a lot of regulation, or not, whatever the term is, I've called them, standards, that's it. They're going to pass over a period of days or weeks, and then they're going to hit the banks with things that used to be applicable to the insurance companies will start to be applicable to the banks. But it won't happen on day one. They're preparing for it, and they're clever, they'll have it running before day one, but it will be up to this committee here to actually pass those things.
Yeah, who's replying?
Yeah, and just to say, of course, that there's quite a formal consultation process contained in the bill around standards as well, so industry gets time to comment on them. And everyone else, yeah.
The issue was around the delegation by resolution, which had been changed, and we disagreed with the comment. We felt that the delegation powers had been described adequately.
Okay. Basa, do you want to explain why you're persisting on this? You don't seem to have a case here.
Sorry, Jay, it was the previous round. We have subsequently.
Excuse me, Chair. There is an additional, if we can please request a correction, that to 71, what you'll see is 71.2b, which refers to the delegation to an administrative action committee the power to impose administrative penalties. That is a delegation power that's being given under subsection 2 to the commissioner, but we would prefer that it's given to the executive committee. And that's in a way of good governance, similar to what we discussed about the some of those responsibilities are so important that we want it to be done through the committee. Janine, will you ask?
Yeah.
Actually, that change it was an error that was changed. In fact, what we're suggesting is revert to the table.
No, I know the committee is thinking on these issues are straightforward. I know the majority what they think. And I suspect the minority parties also. Yeah.
In fact, I just want to know, is there powers that are only for the deputy commissioner and there are those that are for the executive, or is there, so that we understand if there is an element of specific powers that belongs to the commissioners? Are they stipulated here?
Yes, so there are specific powers. So by the commissioners, I'm saying it to mean the executive committee, because the executive committee is then made up of the commissioner and the deputy commissioners. And those are those powers that we were describing in, looking here, I think it's section 60. So section 60 describes what powers need to reside with the executive committee itself. And the executive committee as a collection of the commissioner and the deputy commissioners are responsible for those particular functions and cannot delegate those functions. Then
that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking whether is there specific powers that only resides with the deputy commissioner and are not necessarily executive committee powers, and are these related? Yes.
That's what I was going to. So that was the starting. Then it said, but for the general day-to-day management resides in the, it goes through the commissioner. So like all the powers of the conduct authority will go through the commissioner unless it's specified for the executive committee. And then those respective powers can be delegated down. So those powers that go through the commissioner can be delegated down, and similarly from the executive commissioner. And I stand to correction, no powers that are directly vested through a deputy commissioner in isolation.
Can we look at 72 now? Because 71, I can't see anything unless members have picked up anything. Antonia, you can always put your hand up. You remember that, eh? Or if you feel shy, you can write a note and send it through. No, because she's got lots to say, and I notice she doesn't. I mean, I know Antonia more than most of you, I suspect, because I engage with her every now and then. She demanded a meeting this morning. I must remember that. Demanding a meeting. Okay. 72. Now, 72, you've dropped the word material there, right? Why is that?
So in this interest of disclosure, whereas in other areas we've put in material, because that's... No.
You can always tell me, Kathy, you know what? You can say, don't say with due respect, just say we've covered this and just tell me where. What weaknesses?
My recollection was that we had covered it in the other way, so while we were adding material in.
Look, you know, I must say something here. Advocate Jenkins, can you help me? A certain member hasn't said a word. Yeah. And she's busy on her computer. I think she's looking at the clauses on her iPad, on her computer, right? And then she suddenly makes a cryptic remark. With the chairperson is 60, she's 22, right? I'm slow. So she doesn't explain to me. Can I write her a lawyer's letter, Advocate Jenkins, and tell her I would like her to explain what she meant? Right. Having come back to you, Kathy, did you
cover this before, and if so, when? And is there, I'll take your word.
My recollection is that we had not covered this particular clause, even in the previous.
I'm not so doddery and old after all, right? Explain. Now, there is a difference between any interest and any material interest, right? The one is a much more tighter thing. So why did you drop the word material?
Because in this instance, we think that it shouldn't be left to the discretion, given the importance of the matters at hand.
That's what I think. Anyway, anybody got any other view? No? Fine, we agree with it. Then we go to your next amendment, 3A, as required. That's simple, right? That's a grammatical thing. Grammatical in 4. Now, in 6B, what have you done there?
This is just an improvement in
the grammar and the flaw of the language. Whoever has done this, can we congratulate them? There's one person seems to be doing it consistently. Whoever that is, you don't have to expose in public, that person is somebody that appeals to my heart. It makes my life much easier. No, I like it. You know, Bridget is like that. Hey? Bridget will go through a report. That's why I'm sorry she's gone. Eh? She would look at the commas and full stops, and she'll pick up things, you know, like an editor. She's now in the Premier's office, Pulemabe. Can you go and extract her and bring her back? The Premier of Northwest. You are an NEC member. That Premier is a provincial leader. You can always exercise authority and say, hey, we want Bridget back. Not that we're not happy with Antonia, by the way. Right, then we go to 7. What have you done there? You've juggled the words around, I thought I could see.
It's look, a better language.
Yeah, so I also found nothing in 72. 73 is a standard one, comrades. You can read it later if you haven't. And frankly, there's nothing there that's not done in other bills, right? We've come across it repeated. It's a standard thing. Duties of staff members is a straightforward thing we've covered before. Information by commissioner. No, this is... Yeah, this is a normal thing now, right? So 73, 74, and 75. I really think there's no issue here. Please, good. Then in that case, since 23 minutes to 1, and since we're starting Chapter 5, here we come to a crucial chapter, cooperation and collaboration. We'll deal with this on Friday morning. Thank you very much. 9 o'clock, please, so that members flying out can leave at 12. Thank you.
Are you serious? You have no access to it.